Prosecutors argued Meta knowingly put profits before the protection of children.
The conduct, as I said, was repeated again and again. Over an entire decade in a kid's life, that's forever. That it was done and made with knowledge that serious harm would result, and it did.
We believe the evidence has shown that Meta works incredibly hard to protect users, including teens.
In accordance with the civil penalty instruction and the instructions as a whole, how many willful violations did Meta commit by engaging in unfair or deceptive trade practice? The jury's answer is 37,500.
Big tech critics hail big tobacco moment in landmark social media verdict against Meta, the parent company of Facebook, and Google, intentionally being addictive and depressing and controlling. Yeah, and parents let their kids do that. I'm not defending big tech, but once you go down this slippery slope of, oh, the way they did it, yeah, and you let your kids do that, give me a break. What's sick is Trump doesn't have Elon Musk on his new big tech board. He's got the good guys off the board and has put his arch enemy, Zuckerberg, on the board and a bunch of other garbage. And people are like, oh, there you are, throwing Trump under the bus again. Zuckerberg got $400 million to create the databases of dead people and illegals and all that to steal the 2020. Okay, fine, I love Zuckerberg if Trump says so. Got Todd Blanche, a Democrat, run the DOJ. This ain't good. And I'm going to bet you about it. Meta must pay $375 million for violating New Mexico's law in child exploitation case.
Companies have been very effective in using something called Section 230, which is a law in this country that protects the companies who have social media from being liable for things that their users post on the site. What these two cases focused on is how the company manipulated the algorithm and developed products like Infinite Scroll in order to give kids an addictive product that would keep them on the site and keep them coming back. And what ended up happening is those kids would use those addictive products and then ultimately have suicidal thoughts or potentially body dysmorphia, or they'd be getting unsolicited messages from child predators. And the company is knowingly, according to documents revealed in both of these cases, understands that this is a problem that they have. And both juries found that they did not do enough to stop this. So again, a huge landmark here, not for the dollar figure, but for the significance of the rulings.
Government shouldn't be involved in the First Amendment. We shouldn't have internet IDs. All over the world, they're bringing internet IDs. They are protecting kids. Hey, you put the parental controls on or don't let your kids on devices. Control what you give your kids, folks. It's not the state's job. Because Zuckerberg's a predator preying on your children. Blackburn's Trump America AI Act repeals Section 230, expands AI liability, and mandates age verification. No, it's the AI Dictatorship Act that Trump tried to get passed before he got back in office. Republicans did, but he pushed, and then he signed an executive order on that makes big tech and AI above the law. Nobody can sue them. Congress can't. Local legislators can't challenge them. Citizens can't sue them. And then the executive branch can let AI do whatever it wants. It's Congress has created the AI liability protection dictatorship bill to enforce Trump's executive order that is wrong. That's the real headline. Overhyped. This is some good news. New polls suggest Americans are shunning AI as a breaking news source. They're rejecting it. They don't want it. Well, I don't just believe polls. Oh, I like the proof. The biggest video generating tool is no more. Is the AI bubble bursting? ChatGPT has shut down its AI system because not enough people are using it. It costs too much money, and it's a failure. People are sick of it. U.S. bans foreign-made consumer routers over cybersecurity concerns. I told people decades ago China has all these remote control kill chips and everything. Now it's all admitted. And then it just continues. Apple forces U.K. iPhone age checks in iOS 6.26.4. Yeah, the U.K., Australia, they're all making Apple and other companies do age verifications. Hey, then adults have to do it. And now it's Internet ID that in the UN Gates-run standardization will be used for the cashless society, the social credit score, the grid. So people are like, don't you want to not let kids look at porn? Yeah, if you're dumb enough to give your kid a phone that doesn't have parental controls, you should be thrown off a bridge.
I
I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine. Nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria of the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available. DallasTheStore.com, the very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a PFM member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar. But more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you gotta do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. DallasTheStore.com to get T3 now available and methylene blue at DallasTheStore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Monday afternoon. Big weekend of war to go over. We'll be joined in the next hour by Wid Lyman. He was there at the Pentagon. I was able to ask them the first question with Border Hawk News, so very excited to talk to him. We, of course, have a whole weekend's worth of news to get into. Pretty much none of it good, as far as I can tell. We'll get into it. We'll cover everything that's happened and probably take your calls as well if we can. And then I'll probably play the full interview with Joe Kent again in the third hour of this show. So stay tuned. Very big show we have for you today. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Monday, the 30th of March, 2026. Lindsey Graham lives it up in Disney World during partial government shutdown. Lindsey Graham looks like a full-blown Disney adult on spring break because we just got a new photo of him on Space Mountain at Disney World's Magic Kingdom. Lindsey Graham said he was doing business in Florida and just made a short pit stop at Disney World, but based on the new photo, he was a full-blown tourist. Somebody who answered TMZ's call to shoot photos and videos of members of Congress on vacation while thousands of federal workers go unpaid shot this pic showing Lindsey strolling in the Tangled area of the Magic Kingdom on Friday night, carrying a bubble wand. He's got a princess bubble wand with him. Now, he's doesn't have any kids. I don't even think he's married. I'm pretty sure this is a elderly adult male bachelor carrying a fairy wand, wandering around Disney World. While the war that he's advocated for the last several decades explodes all around him. You know, a lot of people have hot takes. I don't know what the hot take even is. It's just, this is just our world now. This is just sort of representative of everything that's gone just so horribly wrong in the West. It's right here. It's just emblematic. It's just, this is who is leading us. Of course, everything is terrible. Of course, everything is disastrous. There's a freaky, closeted, gay, warmonger, psychopath wandering around Disney World feeling like he just conquered the world because he got Donald Trump to get us into a hopeless quagmire of murder and insanity in the Middle East. It's just, welcome to 2026. It's all gone horribly wrong. We have to go back. We have to go back to a time when the likes of Lindsey Graham didn't represent us. It's the nicest way I can put it. Meanwhile, President Trump's approval sinks to 33% in a new UMass poll, admits war with Iran and deepening disapproval over his handling of inflation. Immigration, jobs, and tariffs, 17% of 2024 Trump voters now express reservations about their vote choice. A new National University of Massachusetts Amherst poll finds President Donald Trump's approval rating has fallen to 33%, the lowest rating of his second term in office. The poll of 1,000 respondents conducted March 20th through 25th finds Trump's approval down 5 points from July 25th and 11 points lower than last April. I don't even believe this. I would be shocked if it was only 17% of Trump voters that now regret it. I mean, from the Epstein files to the total destruction of Maha. Who is even supporting this guy anymore? I don't even trust this. I think this is too optimistic of a poll. I mean, hell, if you look at CPAC, which occurred over the weekend, it was a complete disaster. It was low energy. Hardly anybody showed up. The people who were headlining it are not popular by any means. The likes of Josh Hammer giving a speech to a big empty room while people heckled and booed him. This was the choice that the GOP made. They decided to willingly be the vessels of Iran war, and we will all pay the price for it. So I don't really care anymore. Personally, who cares? Who cares? I think if we can elect somebody who will put all of the Republican congressmen and senators and the Trump administration in prison, let's do that. That's a good start, and we can move on from there. I cannot express to you how utterly infuriating the last, year or so has been, I guess. Yeah, it's from Vanity Fair. They're like, CPAC used to be this really big event. It's not anymore. No, it's not. No, nobody cares. For good reason. What's the reason? Well, here's the headline from New York Times. The U.S. now has over 50,000 troops in the Middle East. The arrival of 2,500 Marines and another 2,500 sailors is keeping the number of American troops in the Middle East region at over 50,000, roughly 10,000 more than usual, as President Trump decides on his next step in his month-old war in Iran. While it's still unclear just what the Marines from the 31st Marine Expeditionary Unit will be charged with, U.S. officials say the president is weighing whether to try a larger attack like venturing to seize an island or another ground as part of Mr. Trump's effort to open the Strait of Hormuz. So the idea would be that we would like take over their oil production in Karg Island and then use that as a negotiation point. Say we'll give that back to you if you open up the Strait, something like that. But of course, Karg Island is not where the oil is sourced. It's where it's refined and shipped out, but you'd have to bomb all of the oil wells all over Iran, which of course they will then return the favor. And this is sort of the most, common or apparent attribute of this war, is that we ramp things up and Iran responds in kind. So we'll keep bombing their water reservoirs, and then Iran will make life impossible in the Middle East for everybody. It's just okay. I mean, I almost wish I was like a QAnoner. I wish I was a trust the planner, because it's almost like this is the only way to leave the Middle East for America. It's almost like the end of this will be that all of our activity in the Middle East is forcefully brought to an end, and we'll have to abandon that part of the world. Or die. So I just, okay, maybe that's what's happening. It's not possible for any of these countries to exist without the infrastructure there to support them. I mean, they get all of their water from desalinization, or at least a huge majority of it. And desalinization requires a lot of energy. If you bomb the energy production plants and the water desalinization, like, those people have to leave. They have to go somewhere else. They can't stay there anymore until you rebuild it, and that will take years. So God only knows where it goes from here. But already, if the war were to stop today, the effects we would still be feeling for years on end. It was a bad idea from the outset, and everybody knew it, which is why they did it, because they're not interested in doing things that help anybody. They're interested in destroying America and Iran in this gigantic disaster. Meanwhile, Trump threatens to obliterate Iran's energy and water infrastructure if talks fail. On Monday, President Donald Trump threatened to completely obliterate Iran's electric plants, oil wells, and Karg Island if a deal is not reached shortly and the Strait of Hormuz is not immediately reopened. So it's been a full month since the combat began, and I guess now is as good of a time as any is to brag about the fact that we were right and everybody else who told us this would be short were wrong. I mean, people are posting sort of the record of people now. Will Chamberlain's one of them. Will Chamberlain, people are posting like, okay, right after the attack started, it was like, this is going to be no problem. It's going to be 48 hours in and out. No big deal. And then a week passes and it's like, it's still the first week. What's everybody freaking out about? It's not going to go that long. And of course, if you were watching the show, I was sitting here going, yeah, in a year from now, they'll be saying, it's just been a year. What's the rush? So now we're a month in And yeah, they're like still pretending like this is no big deal. Like, you know, we can end this at any point. No, the damage already done is impossible to reverse. Like, this is bad. This is really, really bad, you guys. This is really, it's not going well for anybody. So why are we doing it? And again, people doing it are evil and want the world to end. So I guess that makes sense. I guess it all kind of makes sense. Mysterious spike in meteors warrants serious investigation from MSN. The American Meteor Society reports an apparent surge in large fireball events in the first quarter of 2026, saying an analysis of its records dating back to 2011 reveals a pattern that warrants serious investigation. The enhanced activity is coming from a specific part of the sky, the direction opposite the sun, at roughly double the normal density. Mike Henke, who wrote the analysis, told Newsweek, March 8th, Western Europe, you had 3,299 reports. March 11th, France and Spain, 236 reports. March 17th in Ohio, you had 222 reports. March 21st in Houston, Texas, you had 181 reports. March 23rd, over two California events with 306 reports for event one and 122 reports for event two. March 24th, Michigan and Georgia, Michigan 111 reports, Georgia 20 reports. And I've seen a lot more. I've seen very suspicious, and they don't look like meteors. They don't look like fireballs. They look like crafts. They look like ships of some sort traveling around. And I've seen them in Florida and New Mexico and everywhere else. The AMS said that the clearest change in early 2026 was not the total number of fireballs, but the rise in the largest and most widely witnessed events. So yeah, these are all events with hundreds, if not thousands, of people all seeing the same thing, not imaginary, obviously not AI, and probably something to be looked into. I don't think it's a coincidence that this is all happening right around the time of the Iran war for two reasons. Well, for many reasons. One, it's likely that these are just drones. I wonder if this doesn't have something to do with the big drone swarms that were seen across New Jersey a couple years ago that they blamed on Iran, saying that Iran had a mothership off the coast. I mean, that was ridiculous from the outset, but it's not, you know, out of the question, I think, that that was some sort of testing phase, that they were seeing how, you know, many people would see drones flying around, see what the reaction would be, see if they could cover it up. I don't really know, but it's very similar to that, at least the way that I'm interpreting it. So the Iran war, obviously, massive use of drones. If there are people here in America using drones, I mean, there's the drone swarm over a federal installation in Louisiana last week. You know, that's not included in the UFO, you know, aerial phenomenon collections, but could have something to do with it. Also, if you actually believe in aliens and have heard some of the, you know, more credible stories about, I don't even know if I want to call them alien encounters, but look up, I believe it was Tehran 1979, there was a UFO encounter, and basically there were pilots and jets that were trying to bomb places and the jet would just not work. And it was a UFO encounter that's very credible. It's like got very, you know, like official reports from the Iranian government about it. And so if you believe in aliens, you believe that type of, you know, content and that type of stories that have come out before, then, you know, a lot of people believe that aliens have stopped us from experiencing nuclear disasters before by intervening and actually stopping, you know, mechanical processes from taking place. I don't know if I believe that, but I don't think it's a coincidence. But it's obviously not a coincidence. I would be incredibly surprised if the aerial phenomenons that we're seeing aren't in some way related to Iran, either because they're drones or because it's divine intervention to prevent us from blowing our planet to hell. But yeah, that's not a meteor. I don't need to be a big-brained expert to tell you that ain't a meteor, and it doesn't look like a meteor, and I've never seen a meteor like that. So what is it? So what are we looking at here? And everywhere where there are so many videos like this coming out. I guess we'll wait and see. That's your Daily Dispatch, of course, brought to you by thealexjonesstore.com. That's thealexjonesstore.com. Massive sale on today. In fact, you're going to want to go there today if you want to take advantage of some of the best offers we have, like the limited edition InfoWars t-shirt that you get if you subscribe to any product. It's the only way to get this shirt. It's a very cool shirt, but you got to subscribe to a product. That sale ends at midnight tonight. Also, every order right now gets a free InfoWars mystery bundle with mugs, decals, wristbands, that also ends tonight. So make sure you go today to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you and get yourself some of the goodies on top of the incredibly powerful supplements that we have at incredibly low discounts already. I got a bunch of videos to get to today. I'm wondering where I should start off. You know what? Since we showed the Joe Kent interview at the in the last hour of the Alex Jones Show, and we're actually going to play it again in this during this broadcast, I want to go to clip 33 here because this is a video that Joe Kent himself put up earlier today, and I think it's the right call to action that we need at this moment. Here's Joe Kent on a message to Americans this morning. Let's watch.
This week, President Trump will be under immense pressure to commit ground troops to the war in Iran. This would be a catastrophic escalation that will only result in more bloodshed and further escalate this disastrous war. It is critical that we the people have our voices heard. Contact the White House comment line. Contact the Congressional Switchboard. Ask for your representative. Ask for your senators. Respectfully tell them that we do not support putting any boots on the ground in Iran. This is how we the people can have our voices heard. It's critical that we pray for peace, but it's also critical that we work towards peace. Respectfully contact your elected officials and let them know we the people do not support this war. Thank you. God bless.
We don't have the, let's say, the infrastructure the pro-war side does. It's got to be us. It's got to be the individuals. It's got to be us reaching out and making these demands, because no one's going to do it for us. So I think that's very good advice. It takes about 2 minutes of your day. I think everybody can be calling in and just registering your opposition, both to the war in Iran, but especially to boots on the ground. And again, like everything, I'm just shocked that we're at the point that we're at here. And if we do send boots on the ground, you understand that it will be solely because we didn't plan this at all. Like every other option we've like hastily tried to do and it just hasn't worked. U.S.-Israeli plan for Kurdish invasion of Iran reportedly collapsed amid talks, talk leaks and distrust. United States and Israel planned for Kurdish militia forces to invade Iran early in the ongoing war, hoping to spur a rebellion that would bring down the Islamic Republic, but leaks to the media, lobbying by allies and wariness among the Kurds themselves led Washington to pull the plug on the idea, according to a Saturday report. So again, it's like, what did they think was going to happen? They thought that the Kurds were going to jump at the chance to once again help America wage a war and then just immediately get slaughtered because America abandons them. Like, why would they do that? Why was this even an option? This was like plan C, and now boots on the ground is plan like F. We haven't even gotten there yet, but every other plan hasn't worked out, hasn't panned out, was built on a foundation of sands in the first place and was never going to work out. That should have been obvious from the beginning, as it was to all of us. But let's go to clip 41 here, because this is what's really at stake here. This is the deployment of a number of American soldiers as they say goodbye to their parents and family and children, perhaps for the last time. And there's a lot of these videos coming out now. And we can go to clip 41 or clip 18 here. Either one is good. And this is, saying goodbye. And I cannot even imagine. I mean, it would be hard enough if what they were doing was justified and righteous and good for America. But good Lord, seeing your kid grow up for 20 years and then having to give them one last hug before they're deployed to some godforsaken boondoggle in the Middle East to die for Israel. I wouldn't put up with it. Personally, I wouldn't put up with it. And in fact, there's some help for soldiers if they don't want to put up with it. Things like the Pope, Pope Leo, telling all Catholics that the war that America is waging with Iran is bad and they shouldn't participate in it. So I'd think anybody who's Catholic there, could easily register a conscientious objector thing and try to back out. I don't think the war in Iran is legal in the slightest. I think we've already just shattered the entire concept of like rules of war, laws of war. I mean, the people running our country, running Israel right now, I mean, they're insane, but it's on purpose. I really do think it's on purpose. the way that they are deliberately obliterating schools and like parks and hospitals, it's a crime. It's just obviously a ridiculous crime that is engineered specifically to enrage our enemies and empower our enemies. It is not going to collapse Iran. It's going to do the exact opposite. And they know that. And I think that's the entire purpose, right? I mean, they would have done things differently if they didn't want this to be the case. And got some pretty insane videos to show you about this. Well, let's just go to clip number 11 here. This is them. This is America and Israel bombing civilian infrastructure in Iran. This is what it looks like in Tehran these days.
ساختمون لرزید بیشرف سه تا موشک پشت سر هم اومد دیدی؟ هیچ کی هم تو خونه هایی همه در رفتن.
So you see the smoke rising in the middle of downtown, you know, residential area, and another bomb comes in.
دیدی؟
So I mean, there's bombing civilians. It's what we're doing. I mean, there's no point to it. Just terror bombing. So this is what it's like for the people in Iran these days. Now, if you were living in this city, how would you react? How would you feel if you, you know, weren't one of the people who died? Would you want your regime to collapse? Or would you think whoever is fighting against this force is clearly the side of good and I'll go with them? This isn't right. And I think that matters. I really think that matters. Again, partly because it's like, and not entirely, it's wrong on the face of it. It's wrong morally. It's wrong ethically. It's wrong strategically. It's just bad in any possible way you look at it. But even if you don't care, even if you, you know, think they're animals and just don't give a damn about them, it is going to blow back. They are at this point, like, we just bombed a Tehran university. Okay. Total evil, total war crime, no strategic purpose of this. And so Iran is like, okay, are we bombing universities now? I guess universities in Israel and anywhere else in the Middle East. And you know, Qatar, you've probably heard a lot about how Qatar gives money to academia here in America. They don't actually give it to America. They spent money to build satellite campuses in Qatar. So right now there's a lot of American students in Qatar going to the, you know, Texas A&M Qatari satellite campus. They're all targets now. They're all legitimate targets. Like, do you not understand that this is the reason why these, like, rules of war were created in the first place? Was like, okay, we can fight. You know, you and I, we're men. We can duke it out. But, like, just don't attack my kids. I want to attack your kids. Don't attack my wife. I want to attack your wife. Like, and we can have a war and we can settle it. As soon as you start deliberately killing civilians, it becomes a total war of extermination. And for the continuation of the human race, we should avoid that at all costs, but not if you're the Israelis and this is like the entire thing that you know how to do, because when you actually have to go toe to toe with combatants like Hezbollah, they're getting absolutely demolished. Demolished. I can show you videos of like 15 different tanks being blown up. Israelis being hauled out of their tanks. They are losing against Hezbollah, who they all told us was totally destroyed 2 years ago. So I guess the only strategy they have is bombing children and innocent people. And that isn't a way to win a war. That's just a way to get everybody pissed off at you.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it. I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these Embendazole, fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN Zone website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out. They were put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultra methylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, I've been on this in 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvishowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvishowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvishowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells. The methylene blue and iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theelvishowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Folks, this is the War Room. Wasn't a great weekend for the war in Iran. Not if you care about the continuing existence of life on Earth. It's just completely ridiculous. And again, it just couldn't be more obvious. We're straight up in the COVID pipeline. And the shutdowns are coming. And it's not going to be good. And I just hope we're all ready and prepared for when the blackouts hit. And you thought, you know, Hurricane Katrina was bad. Just wait, folks. This was this last 12 hours, catastrophic 12 hours for Israel and the U.S. One, Iran bombed Israel's Teva pharmaceutical factory, the largest generic drug manufacturer on Earth. Chemical leaks, secondary explosions, factory burning. Okay, and that's actually where they make a lot of the transgender drugs. So this is a good thing that they're not making those anymore. Possibly bad thing for Israel that they could potentially be blanketed in estrogenic fumes from this explosion. We don't really know. But, of course, maybe we should make our own medicines here in America. I wonder how much we get from Israel. Apparently we can't have manufacturing, but they can. Iran then knocked off an Israeli power plant in the Negev. They knocked it completely offline. Iran carried out 27 strikes on the Negev with zero visible air defense activations, not one interception, nothing. Haifa port oil refinery was struck. Stocks collapsed within hours. U.S. bases were hit simultaneously in Kuwait, Bahrain, UAE, and Saudi Arabia, four countries, one coordinated attack. An ex-CIA officer said on record 165 little girls killed by American Tomahawk missiles, and they're targeting Iranian universities. Iran issued an ultimatum. U.S. must condemn the university bombing by noon, March 30th, or Iran will strike American universities. Iran announced it will begin bombing the personal homes of U.S. and Israeli military commanders. Yemen has entered the war on the Iran side. Iraq is sending aid to Iran. Iran claims full control of the Strait of Hormuz, 40% of the world's seaborne oil. The Atlantic is running multidimensional economic disaster headlines. The situation changed dramatically in the last 12 hours. This war just entered a phase nobody planned for. Well, nobody planned for it, but we all knew it was coming. Obviously. What else was going to happen? Did you not know about the missile cities they had underground in Iran? Because we've been telling you about this for the last 3 or 4 years. Nobody paid attention. So there you go. Iran promises to set U.S. troops on fire if they enter Iran, and they genuinely seem excited about the prospect. Iran has promised to set U.S. troops on fire should Donald Trump order a ground invasion of the country. And if we do, we'll be on our own, as Israel has said they will not be sending anyone with any of their men to do it with us. Quote, we won't join U.S. on-ground operations against Iran, according to Israel. The Israeli government has said that its soldiers would not join the United States on-ground operations against Iran in the ongoing war. Israeli media, Channel 12, made this known on Sunday as the United States reportedly plans to attack Iran on ground operations. In case of a U.S. ground operation in Iran, Israeli soldiers will not be participating on the ground, said Israel's Channel 12. However, Iran has warned the United States against ground assaults. The Islamic Republic boasted that its forces are waiting for the arrival of U.S. troops in order to set them on fire. Meanwhile, Israel said it will further expand the buffer zone in southern Lebanon. But, of course, it's not a buffer zone. They are attempting to take over, conquer, and annex it. It's not going very well for them, I hate to tell you. We can go to just a couple of these videos. I've seen more Hezbollah videos in the last 72 hours than I ever have in my life. I like keep thinking, oh, I've seen this one, then I watch, I'm like, nope, this is a new one. So I have the feeling that things are going even worse for Israel than they're even letting us know. And Hezbollah is bragging about just carrying out hundreds and hundreds of attacks, all successful. We can show you some of these. And I want to show you some of these, not because, well, it's a couple things. For one thing, the Israeli military is not actually good on the ground. They're actually terrible. Just totally honest, like there's a reason that Hamas still runs Gaza, because all Israel can do is bomb people. When it's time to put boots on the ground, Israel comes to America because we have men that are brave and competent and able to carry out those actions. They just don't have those men. They don't have the numbers of them, but the numbers that they do have, they're like conscripted 19-year-olds that grew up in Chicago, okay? They're not like hardened combat veterans like the guys they're going up against in Hezbollah, who grew up in rubble and whose only joy in life is like waging war against Israel. So it's like, what, you think you're going to beat these people with a bunch of American college students? Are you idiots? So they need America there on the ground. So I want to show you these videos, for one thing, to shatter the narrative that Israel is achieving anything in northern Israel / southern Lebanon, but also because I wonder how long it will be until we're seeing videos of American men dying like this. How long will it be until we're getting Hezbollah or Iran uploading videos of American soldiers being taken out? Because as incompetent as the Israelis seem to be, our men will die. Like if we try to put men on the ground, probably a large number of them are going to be dying in high definition TV on all of our devices? Is that something we're willing to put up with it, up with? Is that something that we're ready as a nation to observe on the regular? Because I think this only works in a place like Israel because they can censor all of this, which is why probably one of the reasons that they're trying to get all the censorship in place right now. Because, I mean, this is like the key point of censorship, right? It's like, if they can stop you from knowing the effects of their policies, then you won't stop them from implementing their policies. Same reason why, you know, rape statistics are censored in Sweden. Because they want the bad thing to continue. They want the bad policy to continue, so they have to hide the negative consequences of the policy. Well, here's just some of the negative consequences of the Israeli war policy. Let's go to clip number 19 here. This is Israeli soldiers being blown up by a trap as they're watched by Hezbollah. Let's watch. There, and boom, you see the bloody body go flying. So if that was your son there on the ground dying, how would you feel? Would you feel like what he was doing was honorable and righteous and good? Was his sacrifice worth it? Or is he being used as a meat sack by a bunch of people who despise him? We can go to clip number 20 here. This is Hezbollah soldiers dragging an Israeli soldier out of a tank and abusing them as they do so. And to be honest, I mean, what are we supposed to feel bad for the tanks blowing up civilians and churches? They just blew up like the third oldest church in the world in Lebanon. They're deliberately targeting churches. They're deliberately ethnic cleansing Christian populations out of the Middle East. This is Israel doing this. And of course, it's happening in Syria as well. And it doesn't make any sense. But we replaced Bashar al-Assad with al-Jilani, al-Shara, as he's now called. Over the weekend, there were anti-Christian pogroms throughout Syria, mobs of Islamists driving around, ethnically cleansing areas of Christians, looting their houses, driving them out or killing them if they choose to stay. This is happening in Syria with the new leadership who today was welcomed with open arms into Europe. We can go to clip 42 here. Al-Shara has arrived in Germany for their visit to, Israel destroyed the mausoleum of St. Peter, Apostle of Christ, in the village of Shama. Here, bring that back up so I can tell people exactly what Israel deliberately destroyed. Yeah, if y'all can bring up that tweet you just had up, I want to read that. Israel destroyed the mausoleum of Simon Peter, Apostle of Christ, in the village of Shama in southern Lebanon, 1,925 to 1,995 years old. Christians of the world, wake up. And it's not just that. I mean, the historical sites in Lebanon are really unparalleled. Baalbek, some of the Roman ruins, some of the ruins that predate Rome, that people don't even know who built them or how, spawning legends of giants because of just how the scale is truly inhuman. Maybe those will be blown up too. I mean, Israel is ISIS. Like, they are ISIS, right? Israeli forces destroyed the Shrine of Shamon, locally also called the Shrine Mausoleum of St. Peter in Shama, southern Lebanon, on November 15th, 2024. Mixed clashes with Hezbollah. Lebanese sources report troops rigged it with explosives after the site in fighting and blew it up on withdrawal. Video matches the rubble shown. It is revered by local Christians and Shia. Interesting. I wonder if it got hit again. Because it wasn't an accident last time. Probably wasn't an accident this time. But that's not the only one. I mean, they are literally going around destroying Christian holy sites. It's not an accident. And it's not a coincidence that the guy who was ushered in by the globalist, Al-Shara, clip 42 here, welcomed into Germany like a king, even though as this event is going on, they're carrying out pogroms against Christians in his country. Let's go to clip 42 here. Clip 42. So there's Al-Shara, you know, arriving in Germany, being welcomed. The literal red carpet rolled out for him. Murderous former Al-Qaeda decapitator-in-chief, now a part of Syria. He's carrying out Christian pogroms. No hesitation in welcoming him into Europe. Like, it's on purpose, you guys. It's not an accident. It's not a coincidence. Everywhere America gets involved, the Christians get eradicated every single time. Always at the behest of Israel. They are not our friends. Okay? And again, they're talking about boots on the ground as if it's even possible. They can't even break through Hezbollah, who they all told us was totally destroyed. I mean, you're talking about comparing Hezbollah to Iran. I mean, hell, comparing Hezbollah to Iran is like comparing Hamas to Hezbollah, and they can't even get Hamas destroyed. So it's like, we're just engaged in an endless cycle of murder with no hope of an end anywhere, ever. There's no goal we're trying to get to, except for Israel wants to conquer the whole region and I guess kill everybody who resists. And then once that region's gone, I'm sure they'll stop, right? There's no way that by driving all the Muslims out of the Middle East and into Europe, they would then continue the operation into Europe, right? It's not like they're already calling Turkey the next Iran. This doesn't stop until we stop Israel. That's the only thing that stops this, okay? Let's go to clip 40 here. These are Israeli tanks being hit by Hezbollah FPV drone explosives, just one after another. Here's one. These are the multi-million dollar, you know, tank platforms that Israel operates, and Hezbollah is publishing videos of taking them out. A lot of them, by the way. Like dozens. So again, what are we, this is Hezbollah. This is the Lebanese militia. And they can't even break through and they're being slaughtered by the dozens there. I mean, the whole thing is just, utterly ridiculous. Meanwhile, clip 27 here, this was footage released by Israel. So Hezbollah releases footage. It's them blowing up tanks. Israel releases footage. It's them blowing up civilians. And they're proud of this. They're happy about this. Like, look at all these buildings we blew up. There's no military installations. They're literally just bragging about bombing schools and things. So, again, just total abject war crime. Nobody's doing anything about it. Let's go to clip 21 here. Hezbollah hitting Israeli Merkava tanks with guided missiles. And watch that. Clip 21. There's the tank there on the left. I'm telling you, I could literally have this whole 3-hour episode of the War Room be nothing but just like combat footage from Hezbollah messing Israel up. They really are. And there's the launch. So, I mean, again, you expect Americans to be okay with this type of footage coming out of Americans experiencing this? I don't know. I don't know how that's going to go. And you've got picture videos like this. This one went viral. Clip 22 here. This is historical footage. It's not new necessarily, but it's the first-person drone footage. And there's a couple things about this. This footage is from, you know, Ukraine. And you see the guy dodge, and he dodges it a couple times before it eventually hits him. But the question is, why? Because there are a couple videos like this. There have been, you know, multiple videos like this put out. And the question is, why is there a guy with no helmet, no weapon on a vacant road in the middle of nowhere? Is this even a Russian soldier? Like, wouldn't he have a gun? Where's his gun? Is this not potentially a prisoner of war that they let out in order to hunt him with a drone? I mean, it looks like they're messing with him. It looks like they're deliberately just screwing with him. I mean, you know, these drones explode. So, like, as long as they're close enough to him, they can detonate it and kill him. But they, like, miss him several times on purpose and then close in on him. If that was a kid from Kansas, how do you think America would react to that? And I say that as if it's a, you know, speculative or a, you know, hypothetical. When there is footage like this with kids from Kansas running for their lives from explosive drones. How do you think America is going to react to that? How do you think we're going to feel as a country if that happens? Now, it gets even worse because the Israeli war on journalists is nothing new. They killed basically every single journalist in Gaza, hundreds of them, more than any other war in the 20th century combined. On purpose, they were targeted. And in fact, you had instances where, you know, documentary filmmakers making documentaries about Gaza, if they couldn't get to the documentary filmmaker, they would just kill their whole family on purpose, like as punishment, because that's the mindset. If you oppose us, you deserve to die. It's like all the videos of IDF soldiers, you know, holding up Mein Kampf books in Gaza going, see, they deserved it. It's like opposing you doesn't mean people deserve to die, especially if they're opposing you from a position of we are being attacked by Israel. We oppose people attacking us. That's not a bad reaction to have. But to Israel, it is. It's like they should be allowed to kill you and you should be thankful for it. And if you're not, that just proves they were right to kill you. See how that works? It's very convenient. So they are at this point literally hunting journalists. I mean, they have been for a while. They've killed every journalist in Gaza. Now they're attacking journalists in Lebanon. Dramatic moment, CNN journalist is put in a chokehold by armed Israeli soldiers before news crew is detained. A CNN journalist was wrestled into a chokehold by Israeli soldiers as they detained an entire news crew in the West Bank. Photojournalist Cyril Theophilus was forced to the ground during a violent confrontation with members of the IDF on Friday. The crew were interviewing Palestinians who had allegedly been attacked by Israeli settlers near the town of Tayasir. When they were approached by the IDF, soldiers brandished their weapons, pointing them directly at the news crew and ordered them to stop interviewing, video showed. Stop, sit down, one soldier reportedly yelled, approaching the news team as well as two young boys a few feet in front of them. The soldiers just immediately came up and started pointing their weapons directly at us, telling everyone to sit down immediately, Jerusalem correspondent Jeremy Diamond told the camera. So again, you know, people are speculating. They're like, well, they probably don't speak English. They don't know this was an American news crew. They probably would have left it alone if they'd known. But they were just treating this news crew like they treat every news crew. And so, of course, they come in and try to force them to delete the footage and just intimidate them in general. Again, I, you know, used to be against this, used to be a thing that, you know, would cause outrage and fury. Not anymore. It's just par for the course, I guess, which in a way it's kind of like, all right, then why are you complaining about like the Holocaust, right? I mean, if this is the mindset that you have, it's like, then I don't want to hear you complain about the Holocaust anymore. If the idea is like, well, they oppose us, there are no innocents, there are no children in Gaza, they're all terrorists. It's like, okay, then why are you complaining that the Germans treated Jews that way? If that's the mindset you want to create, like, do you understand how dangerous it is for them to be normalizing this for themselves on top of everybody else? But I guess that Maybe that's just like a good response. It's like from now on, if you're in a conversation with somebody who's like, but they're all terrorists, just be like, okay, was Hitler wrong? I mean, you can't really hold both of these views. I didn't think Hitler was wrong and it's wrong what the Israelis are doing, but you can't approve of what the Israelis are doing and act all high and mighty about Hitler. Hitler was generous compared to the Israelis. He didn't publicize his murder campaign, right? He didn't make, you know, celebrate it and laugh at it, brag about it like the Israelis do. They're worse than the Nazis in a lot of ways. Here's one of them. Go to clip 25 here. This is friend of the show, goes by Prop & Co. on X. He's traveling around the region investigating. And by the way, this is following three journalists in Lebanon who were assassinated. Killed very deliberately, double strikes on their news van, actually. And there was no target anywhere near the news van. It was a, you know, van, very obviously marked as press. And they bombed it, just like they bombed the, you know, World Food Kitchen humanitarian aid last year. So Prop & Co. is traveling around. Israel just bombed three Lebanese journalists to death on purpose with a double strike. And apparently they're hunting Prop & Co. Let's go to clip 25 here.
I was paranoid, at least. I was thinking maybe it's either a coincidence or there's a message. Well, yesterday we get to Bandar Abbas, Minab actually, which is right outside Bandar Abbas. And we visited the little girls' school, for boys and girls, little school at Minab that was bombed by a Tomahawk missile. 168 people died. We filmed it. We documented it. It was very emotional and impactful. 5 or 10 minutes after we left, it got bombed. So now the team is like, okay, this is maybe too much of a coincidence. We're potentially being targeted. And this coincided with the news that two journalists in Lebanon were targeted and killed by the Israelis.
So that's Prof & Co. Describing the fact that they went to a site in Iran, filmed it, and then 5 minutes later, it was bombed. And then they went to another place, filmed it. 10 minutes later, it was bombed. It seems like Israel is literally hunting journalists. And I'm worried for Prof & Co. I mean, if he didn't get out of there at the time that he did, he'd be dead now. Just like the Lebanese journalists. Israel kills 3 journalists in Lebanon, including a reporter for Hezbollah-run broadcaster. A Lebanese reporter working for a Hezbollah-owned television network was among 3 journalists killed in an Israeli strike in Lebanon. Al-Manar Television said its journalist Ali Shaoub was killed in an Israeli strike targeting the vehicle he was in. The Israeli military accused Shaoub of being a terrorist operating under the guise of a journalist who was exposing locations of Israeli soldiers in southern Lebanon. Al-Manar called Shaoub a icon of resistance media in its report announcing his death. The Committee to Protect Journalists said it was investigating the attack, adding that journalists are not legitimate targets, regardless of what outlet they work for. We have seen a disturbing pattern in this war and in the decades prior of Israel accusing journalists of being active combatants and terrorists without providing credible evidence. In fact, I believe it was this person, and there's a strange kind of series of events. But Fox News published a quote from the IDF, a response to them, saying, do you have any evidence that this person was Hezbollah? And the IDF literally responded saying, no, that was a Photoshop. Like, they have a picture of this guy in a Hezbollah outfit, uniform, but they admit it was Photoshopped. And so then there's speculation going on, I don't think the IDF knew that that statement would be published. It seemed like maybe, you had a producer from Fox going, hey, do you have any, evidence this guy was Hezbollah? And the Israelis went, no, that one picture, it's actually Photoshopped. And then they actually published that. And it's like, I don't know if you're supposed to publish that exactly. So the IDF literally admittedly Photoshopped a journalist to look like a combatant after they killed him. And 2 other combatants, or 2 other journalists, in fact, who weren't even claimed to be combatants. They're murderers.
Let me do this. The folks at Bigley, about 7-8 months ago, came out with this top-of-the-line Faraday cage backpack with all these special pockets, super high quality. I'd previously bought a bag for myself personally like this, similar brand, $400 or $500. The problem was they only got 500 of these. Well, guess what? They got a couple thousand of them finally in. It took 7-8 months. It's a $600 value, just the bag, for $249. But guess what comes in it? America First Faraday bag, America First Tactical Trench Knife. It's badass. America First T-shirt, MK Ultra Atomic Defense Supplements, Shilajit Gummy, Shilajit Capsules, Irish CMOS Capsules, Warcry Premium product, and more. And VIP members get it for $199. Also, as you can now read in the newspapers, the Texas receiver is saying he's not going to pay the rent or the bills. So you ask, when are we going to shut down? Tomorrow? 2 weeks from now? I'm going to just wait till the lights turn off, okay? You'll probably see InfoWars go down the site. You see streaming shut down. Once we can't do it, we have the All Shows Network built at Bigley Owns, and I'm going to go over and do it there. But I'm going to ride this horse till it dies. I'm going to ride this race car till the engine blows or the wheels come off. Or I crash into the embankment. I ain't giving up. I'm riding this horse till I win or I lose. And then the media's like, oh, he's finally going to lose. Oh, yeah, all right. I am the InfoWar. Our listeners are the InfoWar. And we got a whole line. Here's the first one of limited edition Veterans of the InfoWar t-shirts. Look at this. This is badass. And it's the troops on Iwo Jima raising the American flag with the InfoWars patch where the stars are. InfoWars lives forever. It is an amazing limited edition shirt. Look at that bad boy. And it funds this operation, but also the Alex Jones Network to keep us on the air. We need funds. We want to get more reporters back and expand, but we need your support. TheYellowstoneStore.com.
I'm here to offer a public apology for my criticisms of Israel. I'm deeply sorry. This is a learning moment for me, and I'll share with you the six lessons I've learned from my grave mistakes. But first, here's my full confession and apology. I've made videos recently erroneously criticizing the Israeli government, and while there was plenty of agreement with my perspectives, there was also some rageful backlash. And I took note of the many hostile comments insulting me, calling me a Jew hater, an anti-Semite, smearing my character. And those comments have completely changed my mind on the topic of Israel. Quite frankly, the intimidation worked. I realized I was being an anti-Semite, full of hate, and I now fully support the government of Israel. I'm sorry for everything I've said. Sincerely, it was wrong. But here's what surprised me. I took painstaking efforts to deceive you, the viewer. In my videos criticizing Israel, I would carefully put in nuance to draw the distinction that I wasn't talking about Jewish people or citizens of Israel, while clearly stating I was talking about the government of the country of Israel. Like this. By the way, if you're sitting there going like, this isn't a look at citizens of Israel, this is a look at the Israeli government. But so-called haters like this saw right through that and knew that I was talking about Jewish people. The very people I wasn't talking about and deliberately said I wasn't talking about, not only that, but they rightfully pointed out that I hate Jews. My only question to these commenters is like, how could you tell? That's what I was, because I tried so hard to hide it. And other helpful comments like this one helped awaken me from the Jew hate I had just fallen into. F*** you, you f***ing moron. There's 57 Muslim countries. We can have one. Go f*** yourself. It occurred to me a person like this is excellent at spotting hate because she clearly has none of it inside of her, and she correctly spotted it in me. These types of comments were very effective. They typically involved hostility, character smearing, insults fueled by anger. In other words, they're the loudest people screaming. And that might make you think that if you don't agree with them, then you're in a small, shameful minority of people. But according to this poll, they're actually in the 5.5% minority of people. What does that tell you? Well, it tells you that 94.5% of people need hostility and emotionally charged insults thrown at them so they can be convinced to think like you. Just like I was. I mean, my realization was like, look at the behavior of these people calling me an anti-Semitic sack of shit. What do they believe? Because I want to be just like them. And realizing that they have the exact same perspectives as Lindsey Graham gives me a good, principled man to set my sights on to emulate. And even though people like say it, I honestly don't think Lindsey Graham is gay. Side note, I also noticed that most of the haters had Israel flags in their bios. And just to clarify, when people were doing that with Ukraine, saying Ukraine's our greatest ally, we know it was just people falling for anti-American propaganda. But with Israel, it's different because Israel is our greatest ally. And I stand with Israel. At least I do now. Now, before I get to the very humbling lessons I've learned, I want you to know that I recently sat down with two of my closest friends who are Jewish. Here's what I said to them. I apologize for hating you guys. They said back to me, how have you been hating us? I said, well, I've been openly criticizing Netanyahu and Israel's government. And I've learned that's really me.
This is so good. This is JP Sears. Full video is about twice as long. It's about 10 minutes, but I had to show at least a part of it. I mean, I don't know how anybody talks about any of this stuff without throwing in a little bit of sarcasm and parody, because it's all so ridiculous.
I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra Methylene Blue. Blue.
I know. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. 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 I mean, this is just bonker town.
I know. I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Methylene blue, 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 blue. I just can't shut up about it, up about it, up about it, up about it. Get yours now at thealexshowstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
Peeling back the layers of the day's events to reveal the core truth. War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. Second hour is on. You can find us at Infowars.com/show, band.video. I'm on X at Harrison H. Smith. We're also at Real Alex Jones, at Infowars, at AJN Live. Make sure you're following all those for whatever comes next. And, of course, supporting us at thealexjonesstore.com. I'm going to be joined shortly by Wid Lyman. He was actually there in the press briefing room today. He got the first question in the White House briefing of Caroline Leavitt. We'll go to that video and then ask Wid about what it was like and continue this conversation. Go to clip 12. This is Wid Lyman of Border Hawk News asking the White House about concerning changes to Trump's immigration policy. Let's watch.
With that, I will take your questions today. Here in our new media seat, we have Wid Lyman. Thank you for being here. And why don't you kick us off?
Thank you. Happy Easter.
Thank you. You as well.
Two questions for you. Thank you. There are some concerns the administration is starting to change its position on deportations, border enforcement, possibly asylum policies. What would you say to Americans that are somewhat concerned that the shift has happened?
Sure. Well, while there has, of course, been a change in leadership at the Department of Homeland Security with former Senator, now Secretary Mullen, joining the president's cabinet, I can assure the American people there has not been a change in policy. It has always been the policy of this president and this administration to deport the worst of the worst illegal alien criminals from our communities. That's something I know Secretary Mullen remains wholeheartedly committed to doing. And it's something that is overwhelmingly popular with the American people. And it's something that is necessary to protect our homeland and to prevent deaths of Americans in our country. Just last week, Sheridan Gorman, a young woman in Chicago, was shot and killed on the street walking with her friends outside of her university by an illegal alien from Venezuela who had no right to be here in the first place. And it's despicable that Democrats are currently defunding the department that's responsible for removing illegal aliens like that. And I would also add it's despicable that the lack of coverage of this young woman's case, of her life, and the way that it was tragically cut short. I saw a survey over the weekend that I'd like to bring to all of your attention. This is the media coverage of the case of Sheridan Gorman. You have ABC News has spent 1 minute and 19 seconds between 2 days when this case was first alerted. You have CBS, 2 minutes and 1 second. You have NBC, 23 seconds spent on the life of a young, beautiful American woman whose life was taken short by an illegal alien who should have never been here in the first place, when we are in the middle of a battle on Capitol Hill with a major political party, the Democrat Party, who wants to defund the agency that is responsible for protecting Americans. I think her life was worth more than 23 seconds on cable television, and I think the people in this room have a responsibility to report on cases like this because it just exemplifies why the president believes so strongly in deporting illegal aliens from our communities. And thank you for the question.
So it's a good question by Wid Lyman at Border Hawk News. I'm not sure you really got an answer there, Wid. Welcome to the show, sir.
Great to be back. Happy Easter to you as well. Welcome back to the White House. I would say the question was direct and the answer was sort of what we expected, a slight shift in what they are trying to push forwards as opposed to what we are trying to ask about. And that question comes from, you know, talking to a lot of our viewers who are just normal people. You know, we got bricklayers, truck drivers, some people in politics, but they're concerned that the messaging has shifted slightly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, she says, like, well, we're always going to go after the criminal aliens, you know, the violent criminals. It's like, well, yeah, duh, we're not asking about that. That's fine. That's good. You should be doing that. But, like, what about all these others? I mean, there is sort of a priority list, obviously, of the violent, you know, criminals that are here or fraudsters that are here. Obviously, they'd be at the top of the list. But illegal immigrants are just under that. And legal immigrants are just under that. Americans don't want to compete with any of these people. They don't want to have their houses prices, you know, jacked up by the influx of 100 million people. So you didn't really get an answer to that, as far as I understand. What, give us the background to your question. What have the changes been that the Trump administration's made in the immigration policy recently?
Yeah, so there's three parts to that. The main one being the slight messaging shift in Interior enforcement. We've seen a new DHS secretary come in and bring in a new staff. We have seen Commander at Large from Border Patrol, Greg Bovino, removed into retirement pretty abruptly. And we've seen the temperature just lowered across the entire country in terms of these public displays of federal agents going after illegal aliens or protesters. We've seen just so few of that since the end of last year. So and our concern is, you know, is this in response to what happened in Minneapolis? Is this in response to midterms or some other push? And then we have changes in asylum policy. We have a new report that came out recently that indicated that some of the asylum freezing is no longer being frozen since the incident here in Washington where the National Guard member was shot and killed and another one was shot by someone who was granted asylum through this process. So they've shifted both of those things. And actually, Harrison, most concerning in some ways is rumblings along the Texas border that some of the numbers are starting to tick up a little bit because a lot of these people believe and know that maybe they won't be deported too quickly since they aren't criminal illegal aliens. So we've actually heard from some attorneys in Kinney County, which is near Eagle Pass, that numbers are going up currently.
And it's just like, okay, the shutting the border was one of Trump's, you know, real big successes during this term. I mean, you can't really take that away from him. You see the, you know, number of people crossing the border just drop off a cliff as soon as he's in office. It stayed very, very low the entire time. I just can't even wrap my mind around this, Whit. I mean, obviously the war in Iran is trouble enough, but like to simultaneously then be abandoning some of your core, you know, promises on the campaign trail. I mean, what is the thinking here? Do you have any insight into like why they think this is a good idea?
You're right about campaign promises. If you remember, Harrison and your audience will for sure, there were signs at the RNC that said mass deportations. It was a chant that went across, and to a large degree, it is why President Trump lives here now, is because of that promise to mass deport a certain amount of people. And it looks like they've had about 2.5 million self-deports and about 800,000 people arrested by the admin, which, you know, they deserve credit for those numbers, no question. And we have net migration reduction, negative reduction in a lot of U.S. cities, which is, again, something that should be touted. But this shift is really stark. And I think they've even stopped using the term mass deportation. There are several reports from large outlets that spoke with insiders in DHS and the White House. Some of our own contacts have told us that some of that messaging will shift. You know, as far as why, all I can do is say maybe it's midterms. Maybe they just didn't like the juice that was coming from the squeeze, right? I mean, the ugliness of Minneapolis and Chicago and L.A. May have been too much for them, which, you know, for those of us that have been covering this like you have, that wasn't surprising at all.
Maybe not surprising, but definitely disappointing. I mean, you know, you say like that might not have been the reason, but like from an outsider, if I was a leftist in Minneapolis, I'd think we won. I'd think, you know, we stood up to them and they backed down. That. I mean, that's the perception.
They say that. We spoke to people who had the No Kings protest in Columbus just on Saturday, and they were touting a victory.
Well, that's certainly how it appears. That's certainly how it comes across. Now, meanwhile, Greg Bovino is introduced on stage at CPAC to a standing ovation, wild applause. So like, clearly, this isn't about retaining the base. It's not about serving the base or, you know, fulfilling the demands of the Trump, you know, loyalist. And yet, like, are they trying to go after independents? Like, do they actually think that independents are going, I like Trump, but maybe his immigration is a little too far? Like, are they living in Gaga land? Like, what is going on here?
It feels a little bit like that. And if you know too, CPAC crowd isn't super hardcore,
right?
You know, wide right on Twitter, and they're still cheering this. People like Betty Johnson introducing him, which we would not say is a hardcore immigration hawk. So if those people are, you know, celebrating it, then, you know, what are the rest of us doing for right. sure? And that was our question, just signaling to, hey, you know, we're still thinking about this despite, the administration's obviously war in Iran, which sort of dominates the news cycle. And even the DHS funding, which has been a huge issue those last 40 days or so. You know, underneath all of this is, what are we doing about this number, this 40, 50, 20 million illegal immigrants that are in the country? What are we doing about this? And I don't know exactly their motives or their intent. And again, that's the point of the question. They're certainly eager to point out when horrific things happen to American citizens by illegal aliens. But as you know, the person that shot that student in Chicago was not a worst of the worst, a criminal right. illegal alien first. He was just here. And we've seen that time and time again. So these people are waiting for them to commit crimes to arrest them. To us is unacceptable.
Right. Well, yeah, that's the perfect way to put it, because that's how it seems. It's like, well, we won't deport you until you commit the crime, until you, you know, destroy somebody's life, murder an American, you know, shatter a family. Until you do that, then you're fine to stay. I mean, this is ridiculous. That's essentially what they're saying, is that, okay, immigrants get one, right? You get one life destroyed. You know, you can destroy one American life, and then maybe if we get around to it, we'll arrest you. I mean, this is pathetic. It's obviously not coming from the people. CPAC's a great example, as you point out. They're not radicals. This wasn't a, you know, an immigration restrictionist rally. It was CPAC, and it was Benny Johnson, and they are giving a standing ovation to Greg Bovino. So clearly it's not coming from the people. The only, you know, force left is the donors. Obviously, this is in service of the donors who don't want to see their, you know, cheap workers be driven away. I mean, do you think that's a ridiculous supposition?
No, it certainly isn't crazy like a Harrison dinner party, right? So CPAC is pretty low key compared to that. I do think this is very economically driven. You've seen these comments from the president over the last few months that if people are here working 10, 15, 20 years and they're contributing and paying taxes, you know, we shouldn't necessarily remove those people. And we see numbers coming out of the trucking industry that are astounding. Hundreds of thousands of people here illegally that are driving our freight all across our highways in our country. So if you look at each individual industry that hires these illegal aliens, they would all suffer greatly. I mean, the cost of milk could double. You could look at goods and services that no longer even exist because of the labor force. And that is maybe something that the administration doesn't want to deal with directly. So that has to be their main focus, in my opinion. The economic burden could be so great that they're very hesitant. But again, to those of us that have been talking about this for 10, 15 years now, me personally, only five, you know, that is acceptable. You know, let's go back to what we were.
Well, and, you know, the trucker thing is a great example. I mean, these are well-paid jobs. It's actually like one of the last sort of like, you know, physical labor jobs. I can still get you a house and a car in America where, you know, trucking, it's a good lifestyle. And of course, it was the truckers that led the, you know, campaign against the forced injections in Canada. And I think that was the time when they thought we need to destroy this whole system. And I was driving last week. I drove up to Dallas and back. And I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm thinking about it more, but like, it's terrifying thinking there are people that don't speak English in those trucks. As I'm driving, I'm just like reading signs going, okay, if a trucker can't read this sign, like, we're all in danger. You know, signs, all trucks use left lane or whatever. Like, if you can't speak English, how the hell are you a truck driver? And how is that not dangerous? And again, I don't know if it's just because I'm looking out for it more, but I was seeing trucks, I mean, they're crossing the lines constantly. Maybe I'm just more sensitive, but I'm like, this is, I don't want my wife and children driving on highways with these total incompetence driving 10-ton trucks around. I mean, you talk about dangerous. Criminals are one thing. These people driving semis with no experience that can't speak English, I mean, that's dangerous. That's actually an imminent danger to anybody that uses the American road system. That's crazy.
And think about how many signs that are available for just the average driver. For commercial drivers, there are far, far more signs. You have hazmat, you have tunnel information, you have way stations, different speed limits in a lot of highways for trucks versus, you know, regular cars. You have load restrictions, you have axle restrictions in a lot of these different states.
And, you know, imagine not being able to read any of those signs. Those are complicated signs at times, and things change. Like you said, the lane could shift. You have, you know, this issue during this storm. I was driving in Pennsylvania recently, total blizzard, total whiteout, big sign, no trucks left lane, lower speed. I'm getting passed left and right on the left side. I'm a slow driver, but you know, that maybe they had no idea that was even happening. I mean, there was a recent stop in Florida. Florida Highway did a brief interview on the side of the road. The guy spoke zero words of English, and that is truly terrifying.
It really is. So again, it's like, I don't know. It hit me this week driving back from Dallas, just like seeing, cause I was just seeing trucks just like drifting lanes and stuff. And I'm like, has it always been like this and I haven't noticed, or are things actually getting worse? I really can't tell, cause maybe I just hadn't noticed before, but it seems to me like trucks are getting more dangerous. And I don't think that's, I think that is proven out by the stats we've seen. Now there's another big immigration topic happening right now. The Supreme Court will weigh Trump's birthright citizenship order this week. Our nation kind of hinges on this decision. Whit, have you looked into this at all? And what are your thoughts on birthright?
Yes, this is absolutely monumental. If for some reason this can get passed through, this is one of the main focuses on people that come to the United States and they have children here, you know, automatically granted citizenship. And what happens is you come to the country, you have several children, they're citizens, maybe you marry an American citizen, and it opens the door for yourself to get citizenship. And, you know, we're one of the very, very few countries that allows this. I mean, if we were to travel to another country and have a child there, that child would not be a citizen of that country. They would just say, you know, thanks for coming, you know, head back. Yeah. So this is a huge, huge thing. And this could, you know, stall migration coming into the country too. This is, again, a huge reason why people come here, not just economic, but I could give my child dual citizenship here. You know, what's fascinating is we saw all this cartel violence via the CJNG that happened in the southwest of Mexico. So the new leader is actually a dual citizen. He is from California and Mexico, and he was born in California. This is a thing that even cartel members will do. They'll send their girlfriend, wife, or other into the United States to have a child because they know the benefits going forward. So this is monumental if they can somehow get this done.
Do you have any guess as to how likely it is that it gets reversed? Because, I mean, at this point, it's just sort of been assumed that this was the case for like 100 years. Are they going to reverse it? I mean, I have my questions about some of the Supreme Court justices, even the more quote-unquote conservative ones. I have trouble, you know, being confident that this is going to get overturned, even though it obviously should. I mean, do you have any insight into that?
So the administration during the first term and the second term seems slightly unprepared for the lawfare that the other side is going to impose on them. We have seen time and time again, multiple different ideas and policies get pushed, immediately get crushed by some judge somewhere. I mean, the Kilmar, you know, Garcia Brego story was such a obvious one. So whether this goes through or not, and then what happens after that, to me is really the story. You know, if they were to rule in favor of the administration, what happens next? I mean, there are countless organizations waiting to file multiple lawsuits of wide varieties for all of these decisions. A lot of these judges are just waiting, you know, for the call. You know, the Batman symbol goes up. All right, I'm going to kick into gear right here and get things done. And the admin does seem behind in terms of dealing with the lawfare that comes from either a good decision, bad decision, or even any.
Yeah, I see exactly what you mean. And again, it's just absurd. I'm sure you've seen the story recently where it's like there's an island in Guam that like a Chinese person has a baby in Guam and it's an American citizen. And then they just go right back to China. But you've got like millions of Chinese people that can vote in American elections and they could retire here and get, you know, access to our pension program, to our Social Security. It's like, this is absurd. Why is being born on an island in Guam mean that you become an American? I mean, it's crazy that these things even exist. And then we're supposed to treat it like a victory when they get overturned. These things should have never existed in the first place. I got one more, or any comments on that before I give you we got a final immigration story that I think you'll enjoy, but, birthright overall. Final thoughts.
Republicans continuously just play to not lose, but they don't win.
Isn't that the truth? And yeah, we shouldn't even need the Supreme Court to do this. We've had the Senate and the Congress and the presidency for a year and a half at this point. Seems like we could have passed something to undo birthright if that's the way we wanted to do it. But okay, we'll wait for the Supreme Court to decide. Now, there's this. I don't know if you've seen this yet. I just saw it right before we went live. Somaliland offers to extradite Representative Ilhan Omar after Vance fraud claim. Somaliland officials offered to coordinate extradition with U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance when he accused Ilhan Omar of immigration fraud. Omar denies the allegations with no evidence presented. So the Republic of Somaliland is now saying, hey, if you want to deport Ilhan Omar, we'll take her. We'll take her. What do you think about that?
I can't wait if it does happen. I will say that the fraud initiative coming out of the vice president's office is a really big deal. That's going to have a lot of teeth to go after some of these organizations that have been ripping off the United States for 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, we heard a lot about Minneapolis and recently California, but there's fraud in every single state. And it's top to bottom. There's so many aspects to it that would just be shocking. I mean, the Maine Wire, a great news outlet in Maine, covers this a bunch in Lewiston and other places in Maine, that the endless amounts of fraud that is committed by people not in this country. And obviously we commit fraud too, no question. But that would be pretty shocking if Somaliland were to go ahead with that, I guess.
Well, I wonder if it's going to get to that point, but obviously it should. I mean, she lied on her intake form. She's committing fraud like this. We've got to be able to denaturalize these people. And I would hope that we'd be able to do that moving forward, because obviously, Mamdani would be another one, right? If you're supposed to actually declare that you're not a communist, if you're actually a part of communist organizations, like, that invalidates your position in our country. So again, this is something that needs to happen. And it's funny to see Somaliland say, yeah, send them on over. But denaturalization is kind of becoming a topic as well. What do you think the likelihood is that we start denaturalizing people?
This is another lawfare question. This process should be very fast and expedited, just like when people get asylum hearings or have fear claims. Right. This should be a 24, 48-hour thing. Judges should be going around the clock, 24/7, going through all these cases, and this should all be brought forwards very quickly and expeditedly. Again, I don't think that they have anywhere near the resources or time or interest to even really do this, but it would be something that I would say be much more popular than, say, Border Patrol agents just sort of roaming through parks, arresting people. There are so many things that they could do, whether that be this fraud initiative, whether it be denaturalization, whether it be Treasury, which is just on the other side over here. I mean, there's so many ways to go about this, and they've talked about whole of government for years now, and I think a lot of us would love to see whole of government, get all of these people involved 24/7, because this is the main issue going forward. So, we're like an immigration news outlet, and I know Dan does great work for you guys too, but so many topics are adjacent. Yeah. We're continuously amazed at the adjacency of, immigration, deportation, and just any topic you can find, like you said, housing.
Yeah, well, housing, the fraud, I mean, it all goes back to immigration. And of course, but wages, we like to say, when you open up the border, and especially have legal immigration, H-1B visas, these are globally sourced scab workers. The whole point of them being hired is to depress wages overall. Well, incredible work. Fantastic seeing you there in the White House representing Border Hawk News and InfoWars, asking the right questions. We look forward to your further work there. Wid Lyman has been my guest. Wid _ Lyman. Border Hawk News at Border Hawk News and Border Hawk News, BorderHawk.news, right? That's the website.
You got it. Yeah. And just a quick heads up, you have a big crane, behind us, the ballroom, and some kind of installations being put in underneath. Nobody knows. It's a big secret.
We heard about that. Very suspicious. I'm okay with that though. I think the White House needs a bunker system. I approve of those tunnels personally. Thank you so much, Wid Lyman, everybody. Follow him on X at Wid_Lyman. And we'll be right back after a short commercial break. Remember to go to thealexjonesstore.com to support us. Thealexjonesstore.com. We'll be right back.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin and mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts, how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15-20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades, so they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research, the human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. So we've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customer 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our Ultra Methylene Blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I got a lot of things to cover that don't have anything to do with the Iran war, and I want to get to some of those. But I got to cover what has come out over the weekend, at least been confirmed over the weekend. It's stuff we've been reporting forever, but it's worth it to revisit and remind people, in case you're not aware, in case you doubted us ever, that we don't lie about this stuff. We're actually just telling you the truth. And if it makes you think, wow, these people are crazy, just understand that's because the world is crazy and we're just reporting it to you. Take that energy and put it where it belongs. Before we talk about Iran, obviously we're on the cusp right now of boots on the ground there, as ill-advised as that is. It's only one word I could use to describe what exactly is going on here. Trump's approval is cratering. The war is not going well, lasting a lot longer than a lot of people wanted to last, with no end in sight. and with no advantage coming to us ever. So where does it go from here? Well, I can tell you one outcome that's pretty much already firmly established is that this is going to wreck the GOP. This is going to destroy the midterms for the Republicans, meaning that the Democrats will probably get majorities in not just Congress, but the Senate as well, as the way things are going now, unless Trump can pull off a miracle in the next little while. But I don't think that's coming anytime soon. There are 50,000 American troops in the Mideast. And we keep being told that everybody, all the MAGA people love this. All the Trump supporters, 100% of them are completely in favor of the war with Iran. You believe that? You believe lies. I mean, it's just a lie. I don't know what else there is to say. This is what it actually looks like. It's got a clip 23 here, the censored version. This was Rockland County, meeting of Republicans. And this is the type of energy that Republican representatives are getting from their constituents over the war in Iran. This is it's a couple of veterans letting Congress know exactly what they think about them. Let's watch.
You! This is what I serve my country for! Freedom of speech, you piece of
feel free to leave.
I'm a constituent.
If you're going to act like that,
So here you see the sheriff has arrived to haul the guy away.
This young man had rights. You, Lawler.
That's Mike Lawler getting cursed out by his own constituents over support for the war in Iran, and a veteran yelling, you know, this is not why I serve my country. And the crazy thing is, that is what it's like for Republicans and Democrats right now if they try to hold town halls. Everybody's pissed at them. Only people that aren't pissed at them are the lobbyists that are paying for them. So I don't know how much longer this can go on. And I really do think it's time for a third party. I know it's, you know, the way it's set up, that's just like kind of impossible, but I mean, if the majority of the Democrats and the majority of the Republicans can team up on this topic, yeah, Mike Lawler, I mean, look at his face. I didn't need you to bring up the track AIPAC number. Look at his face. You can tell this guy gets money off from the Israeli lobby because of how he looks in his face. $684,834. That's the price of Mike Lawler's soul. He sold it willingly. Can we not massively overwhelm the Democrats and the Republicans just by running a third party that just says we're not going to do what Israel says? Would that not be enough to strip away the majority of Republicans and majority of Democrats and just go, hey, we'll settle all the stuff. You know, maybe I have some ideas. Maybe you have some ideas about, you know, culture and whatever else. All of that pales in importance to the world war that we're now starting at the behest of this foreign state that has waged a coup against us and is now controlling us against our own will to do things that are against our own interests. Mike Johnson arrived at a very heavy security detail for a special meeting with Grand Rabbi David Twersky in New Square, New York. He was joined by New York Republican Mike Lawler. Hasidic leaders regularly meet with both Democrat and Republicans to maintain their political influence. And it's honestly, it's everywhere in the world. I went through and showed a bunch of clips about a month ago There's a lot more now. There was an Irish politician that was attacked on the streets trying to walk through. But whether it's Keir Starmer or the Prime Minister of Australia or the Prime Minister, I mean, every one of them, they go outside and they get mobbed and attacked by their own constituents. Like, do you understand? Right now, nobody likes the leadership of their country. Nobody. All these places that were fighting a war against Russia for our democracy, every one of them is headed by a cabal of psychos that if they went out without protection would be literally torn limb from limb by their own people. This is a tyrannical structure. You have to understand that there's a class of people who rule over us, who are destroying us, and yet remain untouchable because they're siloed away behind a bunch of guns that they get to have that they deny from you. And this is ridiculous. And it shouldn't last much longer. Like, at a certain point, we have to look around and realize, oh, there's 10,000 of us and four of them. Let's take power from them. I mean, it's going to happen. I would like for it to happen legally by creating something like a third party and disallowing anybody with any relation to Israel from any position anywhere close to it. I really think that's because the other option is that the Democrats just pretend to be that party, get all the votes, and then just rule like total communists, which is absolutely what they're planning on doing, as we've been reporting here for months. And just saying this forever and laying out to you what exactly their strategy would be. Now they're actually like putting it on paper, where Axios has an article saying Democrats are thinking about choosing a straight white Christian man to represent them. The problem is they've spent the last couple decades viciously demonizing all three of these characteristics. But obviously this is the right strategy. Some top Democrats are quietly debating a fraught question whether the party's best bet for winning back the presidency in 2028 is to nominate a man, perhaps a straight white Christian man. See, this is a fraught question because they actually are genuinely hateful morons that actually are like, but he's a white Christian man. Are you sure we should support him? It's ridiculous, but it all goes to the meme. And I didn't realize I had a name for it. The John Normalson meme. John Normalson. Crew can look that up. And the comparison is like, oh, you know, on top, there's a picture of a guy in like a, you know, in like cut off shorts and a tank top. And he's like, I'm a gay Eskimo, but I'm Republican. Isn't that crazy? And then underneath, it's just like, I'm a normal guy, John Normalson. I just want your families to do better. And then it's like, but he votes like Mao, but he actually, his political beliefs are to the left of Mao Zedong. So that's the strategy the Democrats are pursuing. They're smarter. They get it. I don't know why Republicans are just universally not very smart. Because I'm trying to use the word retard less, but okay. They're not very intelligent. I don't know. I don't know why we can't get through. I mean, literally, if we just ran like stereotypical Republicans that were just like white dudes and were just like, I just want to protect the country, they'd probably get votes. Instead, we have Lindsey frickin' Graham, Ted frickin' Cruz, and then Vivek Ramaswamy. And it's just like, what are we doing? So the Democrats are just going to run normal dudes that just seem decent and respectable. And as soon as they get in power, it'll be exactly what happened in Virginia, where they pass laws where rape is legal and can't have, bail anymore. And they're going to open up the border and give everybody citizenship. I mean, how can we not see this strategy moving forward, and how can we not combat it? Because I hate to tell you, absolutely running out of time to do any of this. And I want to go to a video here that lays it out fairly well, even if it's not something that everybody wants to hear. Clip number 15 is a video called Dear White People. So I want this message to go out loud and clear to white people to understand you are not special. This is, again, there's a weird sort of white supremacy. It's an inverted white supremacy where boomers in particular, white people as a whole, think we don't need protection. We don't have interests that need to be championed, that we can just give everything away to anybody who demands it and somehow we'll stay on top. I mean, this is ridiculous. We're not even on top as it is. So why do people keep acting like it's it's bad if we speak out for it. I mean, where I sit right now in Texas, I'm a literal minority. I'm not a majority. On Earth, we're like a vanishingly small minority, maybe even less than people think, since all the numbers are lies anyway. Go to number 15, clip 15 here. And I'm just, when you really look into it, when you really like strategize it out, white solidarity, honestly, white people coming together and just saying we have to support white people and our continuing survival. Like, that is the only answer here. You might not like that. You might think it's racist or whatever, but hey, guess what? You don't need to be white to like white people. Okay. This is where this whole thing gets ridiculous. If it was any other race of people, white people would be the first in line to protect them and defend them and demand that they are left alone and provide, you know, laws to carve out to make sure that they aren't lessened anymore. If it was any other race, it would be white people and everybody else that would be charging to protect them. Because it's white people, we expect that A, only white people should care, and that B, it's bad to care anyway. No, everybody should care about this. It doesn't matter if you're white or not. If you're a non-white person, I would hope that you have the decency and humanity to recognize that an entire race does not deserve to be wiped off the earth. Let's watch the video.
They don't want you to exist anymore. It's as simple as that. That's the main goal. You look at all the ads on TV and tell me again that the great replacement theory is only a theory. It's not a theory. We are currently living in it, and most people choose to ignore it. If America and the other Western civilizations don't recognize the predicament that we all face, it'll be too late to save ourselves. With the new law allowing people up to 42 to join the army, we can see that we are heading towards a war. This is very obvious. They're trying to take away able-bodied young men away from this country and put them to death. This would absolutely be catastrophic for America, for we wouldn't be able to have children, and our women and children would be left unprotected for some of these immigrant pedophiles to have their way with them. I mean, look at Britain. The immigrants over there can do anything they want, and they get away with it. They rape women and get off with no consequences just because they didn't know that rape was illegal. True story, by the way. Another immigrant also raped a young girl in the bushes at a train station, and he got away with it because it didn't last long enough. I guess 15 minutes isn't long enough. 2 seconds is long enough. You gotta be kidding me. This will be coming to America soon if we don't stand up and protect ourselves. We must protect America and support Europe and other Western countries with this fight, because if we don't, then we won't be able to have this conversation again.
It's just true. I mean, you can, I mean, honestly, if you're covering this up, like trying to strike, like, it's just, you're the one engaged in genocide. This is crazy that this is the case, but it absolutely is the case. And so we have to, you know, stop this from happening. We really have to stop this from happening. By the way, there's this like giant study that came out. Is it a match? The congruence of partnership preference between Syrian and Afghan refugees and the German population. It's basically this giant study trying to determine why it is that white women won't shack up with the immigrants that come over. Literally, it's like, why do you think? But really the question is, why do you think they wrote this study? Why do you think they're studying this? Out of curiosity? No, it's like a war planning document. Basically, it's not working. They're brainwashing. They're, you know, constantly having mixed race couples and every media outlet, the literally like holding camps where you're introducing prepubescent German girls to adult Afghan men so they can, you know, cuddle with each other. We've exposed all this before. It's not working. It's not working because white women want white men. It's not that complicated. You want to know why? I don't know what you're missing. I don't know. What do you need to know? And it's like, well, are they asking why a bunch of non-German men want to get with German women? Oh, no. Oh, it's obvious. Oh, from first blush, it's just like imminently apparent why they would prefer German women. Gee, I wonder. And again, it's like people are like scared to even talk about this. Guys, they are literally coming for the white women. Like, what do you not understand about that? The adult men are leaving their homelands and coming to Europe with the dream of being with white women. And when they realize that white women aren't, in fact, complete sluts like they've been led to believe and aren't eager to run out there and get involved with a bunch of disgusting foreigners, then they just rape them. Like, this is the point of migration. This is the entire underlining motive behind it, to literally breed white people out of existence by bringing in a bunch of foreign men to take the women. This is like bestial warfare from the Middle Ages. It's just in a modern package with scientific studies trying to figure out why it's not working so well. Male refugees from Afghanistan and Syria in Germany show a keen interest in forming relationships with local women. Yeah, I bet. No, I bet they do. I bet they have a keen interest in raping the white women. I'm not surprised at this in the slightest. But the local women show little interest in forming relationships with them. Really? Really? I'm shocked. Again, it's all propaganda. You know, that video just brought it up. I mean, it's actually ridiculous. If you watch TV with this knowledge, like, you never see a white couple unless it's just make the white guy look stupid because you want, you know, the whatever. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. Germany in particular received over 1.4 million refugees in 2014 and 2016, predominantly from Muslim-majority countries such as Syria and Afghanistan. The majority of these arrivals consisted of young single men with prime marriageable age brackets. This is why? Why were a bunch of men in marriageable age brackets brought over to Germany? The study tells you why. And they're confused at why it didn't work. Overall, our results indicate a high level of openness among the male refugees towards partnering with female members of the resident population, but a comparatively low level of openness among the latter towards partnering with recently arrived male refugees. This implies a substantial incongruence in partnership preference among the two groups. Ah, gee, you don't say. Again, it's like, what is this study even about? It's about genocide is what it's about. It's about studying the lack of success their genocidal program is having so they can, you know, reorient it and try to figure out how better to propagandize German women into ending their bloodline. On the other hand, the reluctance of resident women to accept partnerships with refugees is largely explained by their rejection of the imported religious Islam. It's possible the resident women perceive the religious practices of the newly arrived refugees as different from their own, reinforcing a social distance that limits intergroup partnerships. Moreover, this reluctance might not only reflect religious differences, but also concerns about gender norms and perceived lifestyle incompatibilities. Well, you're telling me that German women don't want to be dressed in a trash bag and beaten and have their, you know, evidence worth half as much as a man in trial? Gee, I wonder. But you understand what he's saying with this is like, that's the problem. They need to get, so obviously the German women, problem is with them and they need to be treated for this. They need to be, you know, informed and educated as to why Islam is so good so they can get over this barrier they have to, race mixing and, ending the homogeneity of their country. What the hell? Like, how is this perceived as normal? This is so sick and weird and wrong. They literally imported millions of men for the express purpose of ending the German race. And now they're publishing studies trying to figure out how to facilitate that better. It didn't work just dropping the men off and telling them, you know, we'll cover up for you if you rape these women because we don't want to be, you know, racist. It's like, who does this? What type of mindset? Again, I literally cannot even fathom any other race being subjected to this, let alone putting up with it. I mean, imagine writing, you know, a study that's just like, yeah, we dropped off a bunch of African men in China, and for some reason the Chinese women aren't getting with them, and we got to figure out how to get that to happen. Like, why? What is wrong with you? You literally are like, we have to figure out how to do this against their will. That's basically what's happening, is like rape on a societal level. They're not interested in the pairing, but you want to force it. You want to figure out how to trick them into it. You want to figure out what barriers they have. So like, I don't know, what about war with Russia? What if you just kill all the German men? Then the women will have no choice. Is that moral and good? You absolute freaks. So again, white people got to get over themselves, You got to recognize you're under attack. They're literally genociding you. The purpose of the migration program, literally to occupy your cities. And at this point, could they even get the Islamists out? If they decide, against all odds, they elect the Nazis tomorrow and Britain is suddenly in control of, you know, white supremacist, ethno-nationalist, how would they get them out? Would they ask them nicely? That wouldn't work. Would they force them? Guess what? Every couple of months, a new mosque is discovered with literally thousands of guns and tens of thousands of ammo. I genuinely think right now, if Europe woke up and said, we're kicking all of you out, the Islamists would say, make us. And they'd probably conquer the countries. I mean, you got to do this in a sophisticated way, but you're rapidly running out of time in Europe to get this done. You got to start small and hopefully get out enough people before they realize what's going on. But like literally, if the Islamists wanted, they sent up the bat signal and said, okay, guys, we're doing it. Let's take over Europe. I don't think the Europeans could stop them. I don't think they have the armies to stop them. The people don't have guns. The people can't protect themselves. So I hope that we see people in these European nations, the young men, just like start ganging up and enforcing laws on their own, because it certainly isn't happening from the government. So you should really understand like what is actually at stake here and how all of this is going down. Now, in the last hour of this program, we're going to be playing the full interview I did with Joe Kent, whistleblower, former head of the National Counterterrorism Center. The full video, full interview is available now at Real Alex Jones. I've retweeted it, of course, on my X at Harrison H. Smith. Please share this interview. Chop out parts that you think are interesting. Make your own videos about it. Upload it yourself. Tag me in it, and I will retweet it at Harrison H. Smith. Anybody clipping anything out of this interview, I will be happy to retweet, unless you're criticizing me, in which case you can't be trusted. You can't be trusted. I will not be retweeting your stuff. But no, seriously, spread this around. I think this is an absolute bombshell interview. It's unlike any other interview Joe Kent has done. We got into topics nobody else is willing to broach. And I hope you appreciate this and can share it around and support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. And of course, today is the last day to take advantage of the incredible offers we have, such as the free limited edition InfoWars t-shirt. You can only get this shirt by ordering a supplement for regular delivery. So you get a free limited edition InfoWars t-shirt when you subscribe to any product. That sale ends tonight. You also get a free InfoWars mystery bundle with mugs, decals, and wristbands. That ends tonight as well. Go today to get your free gift at thealexjonesstore.com. Get the signature Faraday bag bundle. That's a $600 value for less than $250, $200 if you're a VIP member at thealexjonesstore.com.
Let me do this. The folks at Bigley, about 7-8 months ago, came out with this top-of-the-line Faraday cage backpack with all these special pockets, super high quality. I'd previously bought a bag for myself personally like this, similar brand, $400 or $500. The problem was they only got 500 of these. Well, guess what? They got a couple thousand of them finally in. It took 7-8 months. It's a $600 value, just the bag, for $249. But guess what comes in it? America First Faraday bag, America First Tactical Trench Knife. It's badass. America First T-shirt, MK Ultra Atomic Defense Supplements, Shilajit Gummy, Shilajit Capsules, Irish CMOS Capsules, Warcry Premium product, and more. And VIP members get it for $199. Also, as you can now read in the newspapers, the Texas receiver is saying he's not going to pay the rent or the bills. So you ask, when are we going to be shut down? Tomorrow? 2 weeks from now? I'm going to just wait till the lights turn off, okay? You'll probably see InfoWars go down the site. You see streaming shut down. Once we can't do it, we have the All Shows Network built at Bigley Owns, and I'm going to go over and do it there. But I'm going to ride this horse till it dies. I'm going to ride this race car till the engine blows or the wheels come off. Or I crash into the embankment. I ain't giving up. I'm riding this horse till I win or I lose. And then the media's like, oh, he's finally going to lose. Oh, yeah, all right. I am the InfoWar. Our listeners are the InfoWar. And we got a whole line. Here's the first one of limited edition Veterans of the InfoWar t-shirts. Look at this.
This is badass, and it's the troops on Iwo Jima raising the American flag with the InfoWars patch where the stars are. InfoWars lives forever. It is an amazing limited edition shirt. Look at that bad boy. And it funds this operation, but also the Alex Jones Network to keep us on the air. We need funds. We want to get more reporters back and expand, but we need your support. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Seems to me like there's been a coup against America performed by Israel. Is that too extreme of a thing to say?
A year ago, I would have said yeah. But right now, at this point, based on what I've seen over the course of the last year, and then when you take that data and you look at basically the trajectory and the history of our wars in the Middle East in my lifetime, at least over the last 25 years, you see Israel has stood to gain from all of them. Israel's advocated for all of these different wars, but especially in the last year, watching the Israelis come in, move President Trump's red line to the ecosystem I described, and aggressively push this regime change war. I don't think saying it's a coup is putting it too lightly. I mean, a lot of people will push back and say, no, it's not a coup whatsoever. We want this. And they'll go back to that same narrative that us and Israel have the same goals. But actually, I think more and more, the more time that goes on in this war that we're in right now, we can see that us and Israel just do not have the same goals. When the president of the United States gets out there and says he can't say who he's negotiating with in Iran because he's afraid that they'll be killed, and everyone knows he's talking about they'll be killed by the Israelis because the Israelis have been killing the moderates and killing the negotiators. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know.
Joe Kent has been called a lot of things by a lot of people since his resignation in protest about the Iran war and his resignation from the Trump administration. He's been called, well, probably the worst things you ever could be called by the likes of Alan Dershowitz, who claimed he was a neo-Nazi of some sort. I would say, if I'm going to call Joe Kent one thing, it's whistleblower. I think he has blown the whistle on a very important and very dangerous situation in our federal government, and particularly in the Trump administration. And I think by doing that, he has made all of America aware of something that has been hidden from us for a very long time. I consider his act an act of incredible bravery and patriotism, and I'm absolutely honored to have him on the program today. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I guess just first off, how's it going? It's how long has it been since you resigned? It feels like it's been 5-10 years by now, but I guess it's only been about a week. How have things been going for you?
It's been a busy week. Been doing everything I can to try and get the word out as much as I possibly can, with the effort of hopefully letting President Trump know that he has other options here and that he has been deceived in my view, so that he can rapidly get us out of the situation we found ourselves in with regards to Iran.
Well, that was actually going to be my first question is, is your resignation an attack on Trump, or is this an effort to help Trump? Because I feel like I oppose this Iran war, and I'm desperate to like wake Trump up and try to get him to see things from my angle, not because I don't like him, because I'm worried about the effect this is having for his presidency, his legacy, and of course for America. How are you approaching this? And are you approaching this from a place of love for Trump?
Absolutely. A place of love for President Trump himself, all he has stood for over the years, and then the overall movement that he built. And one of the core tenets of the movement was obviously no more endless wars, but also don't get involved in stupid regime change wars in the Middle East. And I think President Trump did a great job of articulating this both as a candidate, but then also implementing it in his first administration. So look, I am coming from a place of obviously frustration that I couldn't affect the situation anymore from where I was within the administration. And then also just personally, I can't be part of yet another regime. President Trump's attention to how we got ourselves into this mess. And so, look, I have the utmost respect for him. I understand he's frustrated with me. I understand people that were once my colleagues are frustrated with me as well. But again, I'm trying to respectfully reach the president.
Well, so if you were sitting in front of the president right now, if you had 2 minutes to give him advice at this point, you know, not going back in time, but just like from where we are now, what's the path forward? What do you think the best strategy to take from here on out is?
don't get caught in the game of putting boots on the ground, because that will make us put us in a situation that only leads to further escalation. I think step one, he has to restrain the Israelis. The Israelis drove us to enter this conflict. He knows that. I mean, at one point in time, he's even said it. Secretary Rubio has said it. Anybody who was on the inside, we understand that we ended up attacking. Or off-ramp is restraining the Israelis. Stop listening to the Israelis. Tell them that they are done going on the offense. They are done trying to thwart his efforts to negotiate. And he's got to do that by actually taking things away from the Israelis. Right now, the Israelis, because of the military support that we give them.
I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine. Nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria of the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available. DallasTheStore.com, the very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the info war, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you got to do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. TheOptionStore.com to get T3, now available, and methylene blue at TheOptionStore.com.
Defend their homeland, but also to go on the offense. So you have to take away enough military hardware and support from them that they can no longer go on the offense. I'm not saying leave them high and dry. I'm saying they only get the bare minimum to stay on the defense. That's step one into getting any kind of negotiation. Then from there, I think he needs to do what he does best. He needs to directly negotiate with whoever is in charge inside of Iran. And I think he can actually get a deal through the sheer force of his will and all the experience that he has as a deal maker.
So what would it look like if Trump actually tried to stop Israel from exercising its will in the Middle East? I mean, could he even do that? Would, you know, politicians in Congress not step in to, you know, try to fill the gap? I mean, what would the response be if Trump were to try to restrain Israel?
I think there would be major political backlash, as you alluded to. But the good thing is that President Trump is able to do very big things. He is an unpredictable force, and he's a force to be reckoned with. So I think he would get a lot of initial pushback. But if he stood strong and said, look, this has gone on long enough, we've done Israel enough favors. President Trump has a lot of credibility with the Israeli lobby. I mean, he moved the embassy to Jerusalem. He killed Qasem Soleimani. So he can't really be accused of being weak on Iran. He can't be accused of being weak on Israel. If he stands strong on that, I think President Trump actually has the political capabilities and the political will and power to basically say, hey, Israel, like, you're done. We're paying for this war. We're going to meet our strategic objectives, not pursue yours. Because I think a key part of this is realizing that we have a very different strategic objective than the Israelis do.
Right. So what is our objective versus what is their objective? And I know this can get pretty complicated, or, you know, there's a lot of speculation, but I can't even tell what either side's goal is because they keep changing so often. What is Israel's goal and what is our goal in this as far as you can tell?
Yeah, this is a key point. We have not very well defined ours. Now, the Israelis, from an American lens, it seems like theirs is like chaotic and disjoined, but the Israelis are perfectly clear on what their objective is. Their objective is to knock out the current regime. And if it takes multiple iterations of continuing to kill their leaders, continuing to kill the IRGC, and it creates some degree of chaos in Iran, they don't really care. If it creates chaos in the region, the Israelis don't care. As long as the IRGC and the Ayatollahs in Iran are not funding proxies that are attacking Israel or going after the Israelis, the Israeli strategic goal is met. They have a high tolerance for chaos, whereas we do not. We have said basically, you know, very little about what our actual in-state and strategic goal is. We, you know, you hear Secretary Hegseth and others come out and they list off like this list of things we want to bomb. We want to bomb their Navy. We've taken out their Navy, their ballistic missiles, et cetera. And those are like kind of tactical objectives, but they're not true strategic objectives. And so I think this is why it's a great time for President Trump basically to say, we accomplished all of our objectives. We took out all this military hardware that the regime once had. We've met our goals. We're done. It's time to negotiate. Time to reopen the Straits of Hormuz to get energy flowing again.
And yet we've heard the likes of, you know, Ben Shapiro and other, you know, pro-war advocates say, well, you know, this is going to be, we're in it for the long haul now. And yeah, people are going to die, but, you know, we can't, now that we're in it, we can't extricate ourselves, which, of course, to those of us that were warning against the war in Iran from before it ever broke out, this was always the point, wasn't it? I mean, this was always a trap. At least that's how it appeared to me.
If you look historically, the American people actually have some patience. Our shortest wars were longer than the current conflict. The Persian Gulf War involved 43 days of active operations. The Kosovo NATO air war lasted for 78 days, even deposing Noriega in Panama. In the late 80s, that lasted for 6 weeks. And also, Americans are not dumb. We don't believe that if you're involved in military activity, you're not going to lose anybody. Because, again, if necessary military activity can only be pursued at zero cost, there's no use in having a military. Literally, the point of a military is to do hard and dangerous things. That's why our military members are heroes. That's because they're willing to undertake that sacrifice for a greater good.
Do you think this was always a trap, or do you think, you know, it could have gone well, it could have gone differently in the early days, but shoot, now we're in it. I mean, do you think this was deliberate or not?
This is deliberate, and this was a trap, and this was the trap that the pro-Israel lobby and the Israelis themselves really wanted President Trump to fall into, because once you start committing forces and you start saying, like, through our sheer will, we're going to change the regime, through force, we're going to change the regime, and it's suddenly going to overnight become a pro-American government that we can deal with, much in the way that we did in Venezuela. That is a recipe for basically a never-ending war. And like, look, we should know better. This is a big reason why I had to resign, because we do know better. We saw this happen in Iraq. We saw this happen in Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, Yemen, you name it. We've been there, done that. We shouldn't have fallen for this. I just reflect on, had we gotten to, you know, the first couple of rough spots we had in Iraq and Afghanistan, we still had very murky objectives. Had we left then and cut our losses, how many lives would have been saved? How many trillions would have been saved? And so I think we should learn from our past and get out now while we still can.
It seems genuinely insane that that is not a more common mindset. I mean, that we have been through this for my entire life, right? I'm 36 years old. My entire life has been war after war, quagmire after quagmire in the Middle East. And to see us falling for it again is inexplicable to me. Except in understanding that Trump is sort of kept in this bubble. And you've explained this, and you talk about how it's not just about the advisors around him, but it's about the media he consumes and how they all seem to be sort of working together to present an argument to Trump, and specifically to Trump. I've described it almost like it's like Truman Show-esque. They've almost created a false reality around him. I mean, how are they able to do that? And how is that bubble around him not able to be penetrated by people that know better, the vice president, his sons? I mean, how do they maintain that bubble around him if that's truly what's happening?
From my vantage point, that is basically what happened in the Truman Show. Is a good analogy to use. I just call it the echo chamber. Look, the Israelis have great access to senior decision makers within our government and within Trump's inner circle and President Trump himself. And so they'll use those relationships basically to kind of circumvent like the traditional channels of even having to go through the intelligence community or diplomats. So kind of what we were saying in the IC wasn't necessarily listened to all the time, and it wasn't the best, you know, venue for getting things in front of the president. And then you'd have at the same time the media talking heads saying almost the exact same thing. So there was definitely a good deal of coordination with the media talking heads and with what the Israelis were trying to inject into official channels, creating that media echo chamber, in particular to move President Trump's own red line. I mean, Trump said Iran can't have a nuclear weapon. The former Supreme Leader said, yeah, we agree. We have a FATWA that's been in effect since 2004 that we won't have a nuclear weapon. And so that was a direct threat to the Israelis. The Israelis sought to move the red line to no enrichment. And they basically did that by just repetition, by coming in and saying, no, America's policy is what Mike Pompeo said in 2018. 2016 when he was your Secretary of State. It's no enrichment. And then they said that night after night on, you know, Mark Levin, the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, putting out, you know, think pieces on this, getting it ran in the New York Post and the New York Times, until it kind of just became a reality. And then we had a robust debate about the 12-day war and about Operation Midnight Hammer leading up to those operations. And there was a lot of dissent. And there was a lot of people putting out alternative ways that we could get out of this. And I think because in the end, we sort of, not just me, but a lot of us called this and said, hey, Midnight Hammer is going to be, it's great if you can just smash these targets and be done. But even if we are successful in that bombing campaign, the Israelis are going to come right back to us and demand regime change. Because again, the Israelis were very clear about what they wanted. And so I think post June, they created a very small circle around President Trump, and he didn't hear any alternatives. And then Venezuela happened, and President Trump was led to believe that our military can just go in and remove leaders and it will work out, you know, flawlessly. And I think we just got kind of, we used some skill, but we also had a lot of luck on our favor in Venezuela, and Venezuela is not Iran. And then you had the protests in January, and the Israelis came in and said, look, the Iranians are on the streets. I mean, this is going to be a slam dunk. They were going to bomb a couple of the government officials who were going against the protesters, and then the protesters would take over. In essence, we would come in as, you know, this sounds like eerily the same as Iraq. We'd be greeted as liberators, essentially. Like, we would bomb the IRGC who was attacking the protesters, and the protesters would take over. And that was sold to him as like how easy this operation is going to be. Like, the protesters are already on the street, Mr. President. This is going to be just like Venezuela. Let's just launch it right now. He was still a little skeptical, and that's why the Israelis went, because we had the forces postured in the region. So, you know, unfortunately, they did a really good job of creating the echo chamber or the Truman Show around him.
Yeah, they created a, you said they did a great job of creating the echo chamber and the Truman Show around them. And that's basically what it takes. Again, I think part of what is making people mad about your resignation and your letter, I think people like you were never supposed to get into the position that you were in. In fact, the Israel War Room on X, an official gold badge government account from Israel, quote tweeted Laura Loomer and said, who vetted this numbskull accusing Israel of forcing the U.S. into the Iraq war? Seems to me like they were trying to vet this at a certain point, and you maybe slipped under the radar. They didn't want people with morals who would stand up and object to a war in Iran. And I've seen this, and I want to get into sort of the wider conflict going on behind the scenes in the Trump administration. But is Israel vetting our government officials for loyalty to Israel?
I don't think it comes across as exactly that way, but I think there are people, there's the powerful AIPAC lobby on the House and the Senate side, and then the members of those committees who have to approve people like me. They have a lot of say, and they have a lot of sway as well. So there is that unofficial, slash official, vetting channel. And then look, the Israelis just have a ton of access, into the White House, into the inner circle. And that comes from the donations, that comes from the media apparatus. So in a way, they are able to do a good deal of vetting. And they were uncomfortable with the coalition. They knew a lot of us came from a more restrained worldview. And also too, a lot of times these guys are really threatened by people who have spent a career deeply steeped in the region. I mean, spent a while in special forces. I worked in the CIA. I understand how this stuff works behind the scenes. And unless you're, if you have my background, they really want to make sure that you're on board 100% and you're not doing too much independent thinking, because we can kind of call this stuff out. They would much prefer people who have very little experience in the, I would say the nitty gritty, or basically the boots on the ground truth, because they're much easier to pull the wool over their eyes and say, oh no, this intelligence came from Israel. It came from Mossad. You know, it's 100% good. So yeah, I think that's unfortunately the result is we do have Israel and their allies doing a lot of vetting and gatekeeping in the administration.
But you say there's a lot of you there. This was one of my questions, is you're sort of being treated as this rogue person that's broken from the consensus. Is there sort of an anti-Israel faction in the intelligence community? I doubt that's how they would define themselves, obviously, but are there more people sort of behind the scenes that you know of that are unhappy with the way things are going? Obviously, I don't want you to spill anything that you don't want everybody to know. But how prevalent is this type of mindset in the intelligence community, do you think?
So it's interesting. Within career IC officials who have spent a lot of time in the Middle East and have dealt with the Israelis, I would say most of them have a pretty clear-eyed view. They understand that Israel runs a lot of game against us.
All right, hold on. Sorry, you cut out again. Israel runs a lot of game against us, and then you cut out. So there's a lot of people in the IC that understand this. They run a game. Israel, you know, has pulls some tricks on us.
Yep, exactly. So yeah, so most career IC people will acknowledge that, you know, Israel is a very competent intelligence service. They run game against us. They pursue their objectives while telling us how much they're completely in line with us. And also they're very competent, so they're good at what they do, which makes them a decent partner in some regard. But most people in the IC who've dealt with them a lot are very skeptical. Now, however, there is so much pressure usually from political appointees, regardless of which party, to say that Israel is our number one, you know, partner and ally. And like, basically it's just like dealing with us. Which again, if you've been around for a while, especially in the IC or in the military, you understand that that's just simply not the case. But a lot of the politicals that come in, they don't view it that way. They understand that they basically have to say, hey, whatever the Israelis want, you know, we'll provide to them. Now, within the Trump administration, I think it's interesting, especially this go around, we had a lot of people from our coalition, who were a little bit more skeptical of Israel. I wouldn't say anti-Israel, but just skeptical and understood that we have our objectives and they have theirs. And so, you know, there was a lot of friction points where there was a lot of us that were saying, hey, we need to be more skeptical about what Israel is trying to sell us with regards to this regime change war, in Iran. And a lot of those voices were blocked, in the lead up to this last iteration of the war.
You know, what you did by resigning, which again, I think is the most honorable thing you can do, either, you know, if you're against the thing that your commander in chief is doing, you have two choices to either go along with it and violate your own conscience or you could try to undermine him. Obviously, you're not that type of person. You're not going to go in and be subversive, even if you disagree. You said, this is why I'm quitting. This is what I disagree with. I think you did it in the best possible way. And yet what you did has been called a coup. And this seems ridiculous. I think this is a complete inversion of reality. What you did, in my interpretation, was expose a coup. It seems like there has been a coup against the federal government, and that you, as the second highest person in our intelligence community at large, to come out and expose this, this is not being treated with the seriousness that I think it deserves because it's about Israel and, you know, people are afraid to go there. Seems to me like there's been a coup against America performed by Israel. Is that too extreme of a thing to say?
A year ago, I would have said, yeah, but right now at this point, based on what I've seen over the course of the last year, and then when you take that data and you look at basically the trajectory and the history of our wars in the Middle East in my lifetime, at least over the last 25 years, you see Israel has stood to gain from all of them. Israel's advocated for all of these different wars, but especially in the last year, watching the Israelis come in, move President Trump's red line through the ecosystem I described, and aggressively push this regime change war. I don't think saying it's a coup is putting it too lightly. I mean, a lot of people will push back and say, no, it's not a coup whatsoever. We want this. And they'll go back to that same narrative that us and Israel have the same goals. But actually, I think more and more, the more time that goes on in this war that we're in right now, we can see that us and Israel just do not have the same goals. When the president of the United States gets out there and says he can't say who he's negotiating with in Iran because he's afraid that they'll be killed, and everyone knows he's talking about they'll be killed by the Israelis because the Israelis have been killing the moderates and killing the negotiators. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know. And then also what Secretary Rubio and many others said at the beginning of the war, that we had to attack because we knew the Israelis were going to attack, which would result in attacks on our forces. The obvious question, I think, of anybody who's not even deeply steeped in foreign policy would be like, well, hey, who's calling the shots here? And that seems weird because we pay for Israel essentially to be able to defend itself.
Right. And I mean, you know, the way you're describing it, when you lay it out in a timeline, it's like, you know, Israel, it's admitted now. I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu has said Mossad was, you know, a part of the protest in Iran that they were hoping to use to overthrow the government. So it's like they're creating the protest that they then use to get Trump to stage things. And then they launch the attack or say they're going to launch the attack, which gets us to go do it. I mean, time and time again, it seems like Israel is not just pushing us into this. Now they're saying, and I have the headline here, Israel vows to escalate strikes on Iran as Trump pauses attacks on energy sites. So even as Trump is trying to negotiate and sort of simmer things down, Israel is only expanding and accelerating. So, like, to me, it begs the question, are our objectives and our interests misaligned with Israel, or are they at odds with Israel? And is Israel maybe not just not a great ally, but maybe not an ally at all? I mean, do you think that Israel even really benefits America in any way or has any goodwill towards America, or are we sort of their enemy?
I mean, look, it's all about us reasserting our dominance in the relationship. I mean, look, the Israelis are pretty good at hunting down terrorists and killing them, and they can give us information about that. And usually, you know, the guy that they will say is a terrorist, like, not all the time will they threaten us, but sometimes. And so I just think this is a lack of us understanding that us and the Israelis are different. The Israelis do a very slick job of having a bunch of dual citizens come and liaise with us. And it's a guy who, you know, went to school in Florida or Ohio or whatever. And so you're like, oh, I'm not even dealing with a foreigner. They're good at doing that. They put forward a very good presentation, but it's on us to realize that every single country, every single intelligence liaison service that we work with, they are seeking to influence us. That's the way the game is played. Americans, because we're kind of the big dog, I don't think we're used to having to influence people necessarily. So a lot of this is kind of dead to us, or dead to our senses. So we're failing to understand that this is a foreign country that has its own set of strategic goals. And these strategic goals right now, especially in this case, are drastically different than ours. And like, if you look at the last 25 years of our wars in the Middle East, only Israel has benefited from them. We have not benefited from them whatsoever. So it's time for us just to kind of sober up and say, you know, you can have we have different opinions on Israel. I think right now, until we reassert ourselves as the dominant ones in the relationship, they will continue to treat us as if like we're their employee. And I just think that that's completely wrong, for any foreign country to treat our country that way, especially when we're paying for their entire defense.
Right. And of course, you know, I believe you talked about this with Tucker saying, look, it's not their fault they're trying to negotiate or trying to sway us and influence us. It's our fault for, you know, trusting them in certain regards or going along with them in certain ways. Not to put words in your mouth, but obviously they're going to try to influence. It's Americans who should be the bulwark and say, well, is this actually good for Americans or not? If it is, great, we'll go along with Israel. If it's not, sorry, you're on your own. That seems very reasonable to me. How much does blackmail come into it? I mean, how much do you think the Epstein files and blackmail networks has to do with why America is so willing to go along with Israel?
You know, that I don't know. We were kept completely, the Epstein files were all under lock and key by the DOJ, but the fact that they even kept them under that much lock and key and were just so odd, so weird about them, when literally we had people on this ticket and in this administration who, when we were outside the government, were demanding for the release of the files. And now it's heavily redacted. You know, people are, you know, we were told by President Trump we shouldn't even be asking about Epstein. I mean, if you don't want people to think that there's like a ton of blackmail in there, you don't behave like that. And look, I don't think the Epstein files have anything on Trump, because I think it would have come out already by now. That's just my guess. But clearly there's something in there, that's pretty dark, pretty dangerous, and speaks to, you know, a broader, I guess, conspiracy, for lack of better terms, like a true conspiracy, not a I'm trying to discredit them conspiracy.
Right.
I just honestly, I don't know. And again, this is a place where we should demand transparency from our government.
And of course, this was somewhere, that you were aligned with Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk was pushing for the Epstein file release and got a lot of flack for that. He also was, as you said, one of the only, if not the only voice in Trump's ear arguing against attacking Iran in the run-up to Operation Midnight Hammer and the war in June. And of course, you know, you've been sort of central since your resignation letter to the discussions about Charlie Kirk being assassinated possibly by a conspiracy and possibly by international forces. When did that first arise? When did the idea that foreign elements may have been involved or may just have knowledge of Charlie Kirk's assassination prior to the event, when did that first arise to your awareness?
Right after the assassination. I mean, we just started doing our basic investigatory duties, which obviously the FBI looks into all the U.S. persons that were involved. But because Charlie had an international following and he was a national figure, we started looking into this as well. And we found some foreign nexus leads, and I'm not saying a foreign government. I'm not saying necessarily, foreign individuals, but there was foreign nexuses that we needed to look into more. And immediately, the FBI had issues with that, and they kicked us out of reviewing all of that. This went through a couple of different iterations where we asked for some more access to look into things that were well within our purview, questions that I think are still unanswered. And we were pretty much, you know, shut out of that.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it. I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public that's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these... And fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 million people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this house where to put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your doc chamber's on. Medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, I've been on this in 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvishowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvishowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvishowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue. And iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theelvishowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
So that's always been my stipulation, and I just think if you look at the Kirk assassination on a broader timeline. I mean, Charlie was very much against the war, in Iran. He was advocating against it in June. That was the last time I saw him, you know, as I described on Tucker. There was other people that he was talking with then too that can confirm that Charlie was there advocating against the war. And then obviously after Midnight Hammer, I think Charlie, like a lot of us, said, okay, fine, we bombed the nuclear facilities. Now that issue is off the table. We're done. We still want to make sure we don't get involved in a further, you know, regime change war. And I think Charlie knew that the issue wasn't dead after Midnight Hammer, that it was still going to require some more lobbying. That's just my guess. He didn't tell me that. I can't pretend to be like best friends of Charlie or anything. But it's obvious that in the lead up to this iteration, there wasn't a prominent outside dissenting voice that was in Trump's ear in the way that Charlie had been before. And so, look, I just think you need to look into all of these different possibilities and look at the murder of Charlie Kirk, the assassination of Charlie Kirk on a broader timeline to make sure that we're fully doing our due diligence and Charlie, and there's actually justice for Charlie.
And you do that with any murder, even of somebody with no public profile. The first question people ask is there anyone that would want to hurt this person, right? When the body is found, they go to the people closest and say, did they have any enemies? So obviously that's where you start, and you're going to want to cross those off the list. Now people are blaming you, for, you know, an eventuality where potentially, this Robinson suspect gets let off. But obviously if they have suspicious things that they should be looking at, but that they're choosing not to, I mean, that's on them. And if they're going to, if people out there are saying this is a Brady violation where there may be evidence out there that's being withheld from the defense, I mean, you're not the investigator. You're not the one withholding the evidence. Just what is your response to people who are mad that you brought this up? Just from my perspective, it's like, this is a murder investigation. These are the proper processes to take. The suspicious and the questionable thing is who comes in and disrupts that process. That wasn't you. You were trying to follow the process. The FBI came in and disrupted it. So what would be your response to people who are mad at you about just telling the truth?
Yeah, so something that the FBI would say to us frequently, regardless of what investigation, so Charlie Kirk's investigation, any kind of investigation that we were conducting with the FBI, which means there's Americans involved, is they would say, hey, if you guys investigate this, whatever this is, if you guys investigate any aspect of this case, you could be subpoenaed by the defense. Technically, you can be subpoenaed by this prosecution too, but they said usually it's the defense that's going to subpoena you. And put you on the stand. And to that, I always said, okay, I understand that. I'm fine with showing my work in the appropriate environment. But if there's still more leads for us to investigate, I care more about the case and running down all the leads so I can know that I did everything I could to bring about the truth. And if I end up on the witness stand, so be it. So I know that the headline was misconstrued and people said like Kent's volunteering to testify on Tyler Robinson's behalf. There's not a thing I can really say that's, I mean, if Tyler Robinson took the shot and his DNA is on the gun, whatever, there's nothing I can say there because he's an American. I spent very little time looking at the evidence that's going to convict Tyler Robinson or not convict Tyler Robinson. I was looking at a lot of the foreign linkage, the people who had pre-knowledge, et cetera. So again, like when the FBI came and said, hey, if you continue to look into this, you could be subpoenaed by the defense, to which, you know, my answer on that case and others was, okay, that's fine. I have no issues of showing the work that the people that myself and the people who worked for me were doing.
I mean, if there was no there, if there was no evidence, you know, that there was foreign involvement, then that would be great. You'd get to go up and say, we looked into it. We chased the thread to the end of the line and there was nothing there. So, you know, case closed. That would actually be beneficial, which again is like, they're not doing that. Then what is the real motivation? Maybe there is something there. I want to ask you about, just going back in time and sort of the entirety of the second Trump administration. I have been witnessing little signs that there's an intense struggle going on behind the scenes between the sort of America First anti-interventionalist faction and the Israel First interventionalist faction. Signalgate would be sort of the best example. Were you there and aware of what was going on during Signalgate? You had Mike Waltz, who, according to, you know, the official reports, had intense coordination with Netanyahu on the Iran strike. Contributed to his firing eventually. He became the UN ambassador, so, you know, not exactly disgraced. But, I mean, it seems to me like there's a big battle going on behind the scenes continually between people like Mike Waltz that are working with the Netanyahus out there and the Pete Hegseth, you know, J.D. Vance side, which understands the cost of war and it doesn't want to send people. How accurate is that view?
Yeah, there's definitely a tension. I'd say between the more traditional Republican wing of the party, that are more pro use of force. And then a lot of that in the Middle East does align heavily. And there's a lot of influence, as we talked about earlier, from the Israel side. And then, yeah, then you have, you know, folks like the Vice President, Deanna Gabbard, et cetera, who are much more restrained, I would say, and much more realistic. And you know, honestly, I think early in the administration, it was good to have multiple points of view. And it was good to have a robust, debates about them behind closed doors. And I think in Signalgate, unfortunately, you know, a reporter got added to that. And that's how it all kind of came out. But you did see initially the VP was expressing some skepticism. I was, you know, trying to say, hey, we have some time to make these decisions. So you could see where there was some debate going on behind the scenes. My issue over the last couple of months, especially in the lead up to this war, is that a lot of the dissenting voices were kept out of the decision making process. And I know my skeptics and the critics in the administration will say, well, that's because you're not in the primary cabinet, Joe. Like you didn't rate that level, which is fine. I understand that president has the purview. He has the prerogative. He can have whoever he wants in the room. But from where I was, I didn't see the dissenting voices, you know, being allowed access to the president. And I think had there been just a one or two of those dissenting voices, I don't think we would have plunged headlong into this crisis in the manner that we did.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't even think you need to be inside to be able to see that. I was speculating that was what was going on just from the little hints I was seeing from what was made public. I mean, do you think the Signalgate scandal was truly an accident? I mean, do you think it was accidentally sent to this guy, or do you think this was something that was maybe, you know, manufactured a little bit behind the scenes? Because it seemed to me like it was an attempt to blame the leak and everything on Pete Hegseth to try to get him out of the way. It seemed like they were, because even at that same time you had, I can't remember who it was, but another sort of underling, I think, of Hegseth also got ousted. Maybe it was got, there were a couple people at that time that were the, you know, clearly America First anti-interventionist people that were forced out for one reason or another. It seemed to me like they were just trying to get barriers out of the way to get to that war in Iran. So do you think Signalgate was a real accident, you know, accidental leak, or was this all a media campaign to oust the anti-interventionist people?
Man, if it was an accident, it's like one of the biggest coincidences ever. I mean, of all the journalists to accidentally add to the chat, you know, like it wasn't a guy from Fox. It wasn't a guy from, you know, even just a run of the mill Reuters. It was literally one of the Russiagate Atlantic, Jonah Goldberg.
Right.
I mean, so I was always a little skeptical that it was an accident, you know? I don't have any like concrete proof of that. Maybe it was like just the dumbest luck ever, but you know,
it's
hard to believe in.
It's hard
to believe it was that coincidental.
And it's the guy who was, you know, basically caught, you know, negotiating in secret with Netanyahu before Netanyahu he got fired for that. So this isn't even like speculation or conspiracy theory. It's just like, no, these are the facts as we know it. If you want to believe that's a coincidence, you know, more power to you, but I have trouble believing that totally. I got to ask you, because I'm sure you've seen the chatter online. There are people that are suspicious of you for a number of different reasons and from a number of different angles. Some of the sort of more prominent people like Nick Fuentes or even Whitney Webb have accused you of playing a part in sort of a CIA long game to try to save J.D. Vance's career as president. I mean, what is your response? Are you aware of these rumors, and what do you have to say in response to these claims?
I haven't seen those ones, so that's interesting. So like some kind of a deep state 6D chess. I don't know how that would work, but that's not true. I don't know what else to say.
That's what I figured. Yeah, well, it's about this Peter Thiel nexus, and the idea, I guess, is that they're worried that the war in Iran is going to mess up J.D. Vance's potential to become president, and so they're sort of maneuvering to make J.D. Vance representational of the anti-war faction on the right, which it's like, okay, would that even – is that even a – you know, a clandestine thing that you do? It seems like they're kind of being open about that. Like, no, J.D. Vance is the guy that wants to do the negotiations and all that. But what is your thought on Peter Thiel and J.D. Vance and sort of the way that Palantir is involved in all of this? There was a ex-Palantir executive whistleblower that said, quote, Palantir intends to take over the United States government while heavily funding the effort, and quote, the enemy is within and we are currently an occupied nation. So what role does Palantir play in all of this and Peter Thiel? And what's your thought on that whole nexus?
So Palantir has kind of been on the forefront of a lot of the technology that we've used, in the, you know, intelligence and special operations realm for, and probably a decade and a half now. And they kind of went from being like a scrappy startup to now, you know, pretty powerful. And so I do think, but there's this competition everywhere. You'd find this with some of the bigger defense contractors as well, where whoever can basically be the backbone and provide the architecture for kind of our conversion into more AI systems in the DoD and in the government, like they're going to become very, very wealthy and very powerful. And I think Palantir is probably the most forward leaning on that. In terms of Teal and the network and all that, I don't know. I know Fuentes said like I have some relationship with Teal. Teal donated, he did a max individual donation of like, I think 5 or 6,000 to my first campaign in 22. And that's the extent of my dealing with Peter Thiel, personally. I know the vice president, I think, has a better relationship with him, but I honestly can't provide much clarity there. I know they also deal with Israel, so maybe there's an Israel angle there as well. But the most negative influence I saw in our government was what we just talked about was the Israelis.
Yeah. Well, it's good. I'm glad you cleared that up. Cause there are rumors running wild. And I mean, do you think it's dangerous to have Palantir, this, you know, AI technology sort of insinuating itself into ICE and the war fighting capabilities? I mean, are you suspicious of how this may be used in the future when another administration comes in, that we're maybe building a very powerful tyrannical technology? Are you worried about that?
I am. Yeah, I am. And I feel that way about AI in general. And giving that central node, whether it's Palantir or somebody else, you know, to the federal government, it's scary. I mean, it's very dangerous. I mean, in particular, in times of war, like we're about to find ourselves in, and even like I'm a huge fan of the mass deportations. I think we need to do a lot more. But even with a national emergency like that, there was a potential for having civil rights, you know, eroded, where we need a real active media and we need people really checking the work of the government. So I share every concern that people have, especially with just how dangerous AI is. And the erosion, like, I mean, hey, the Patriot Act was born out of 9/11. And so right. If we see a domestic terror attack because of that, some form of blowback terrorism from the war that we're in right now, or the fact that Biden let in millions of illegals, many of whom have ties to terrorist organizations, and Palantir's there waiting in the wings for this to happen to drop in some kind of state surveillance, or maybe not even necessarily Palantir. It could be Lockheed Martin, Boeing, or some company we haven't even heard of. That's a major concern. And so again, back to the pattern recognition, just like of dumb wars in the Middle East, I think all of us really need to have our guard up right now, for any potential of having more of our civil rights taken away.
Absolutely. And again, this gets to the divide of MAGA. And I mean, it's disastrous for the future of our country. If you're actually a conservative and you care about this stuff, I don't want the Democrats to take over. But it feels like the GOP, just like the Trump White House, has been hijacked by these pernicious influences that do not care about America. And I'm not alone in feeling that. I don't know if you saw the video that came out today. We're filming this Friday. CPAC, a guy gets up and goes, "Who here wants Trump impeached?" And half the crowd cheers. And he's like, "Oh, never mind, never mind."
How many of you would like to see impeachment hearings? No, that was the wrong answer. Let me try it again. How many of you would like to see impeachment hearings? No. Can someone bring some coffee out for the...
Yeah, no, that's
back?
I know.
We've got to keep this House majority. How many of you agree with that?
This is really bad for the Republicans, right? I mean, how does Trump not realize this? How does... Even Lindsey Graham, it's like, dude, don't you understand that, like, if the left gets back in power, they are not going to leave... you alone. They're not going to leave any of us alone. So, like, what is going on politically, and how do you see this MAGA divide? How do we bridge it? Do we need a third party? That's a lot of questions, but just like this political situation is devastating. How do we handle this?
It is. The one of the big problems is the Truman Show factor, like you mentioned, or the echo chamber at the White House. Like, this blew me away coming into the administration. And the administration, I think, was built on the back of the MAGA movement was built on the back of podcasters and posts on social media. It was, hey, the mainstream media hates us. We got to circumvent them. And that was like one of the things that Trump was famous for.
Yeah.
But once we got in power, man, suddenly all we cared about was what like the New York Times and the New York Post and Fox News, who Fox News wouldn't have Trump on their dang programs for freaking what, 3 years? So all of a sudden we suddenly cared what these guys think, and, you know, and President Trump's out there. It's like surreal. He's like, oh, CNN says that the war in Iran is at 100% rating with MAGA. And I'm like, well, of course your enemy is telling you to do the thing that's going to destroy you.
Right.
Like, this is basic here. So I frankly, and this is why I've been making such a concerted effort to go on, all of the MAGA podcasts, because I think that the podcast sphere is being overlooked. And I think it was a very powerful driver of the base of the movement that got Trump the popular vote and the electoral college vote. So what I think we need to do is get vocal. I mean, things like CPAC, that just shows you that actually the Truman Show thing is real. When you've got whatever his name is, Schlapp up there, who's a longtime GOP operative who thinks that like morale is going to be high in MAGA right now. It's just insane to me because I've been watching clips of young kids getting interviewed at CPAC, and a lot of them are somewhat, I mean, they're there, so they're not fully blackpilled, but they're mad about the war. So Trump's got to start listening to his base, which used to be one of his strong suits. I hope he returns to the old Trump that could like basically hang out on Twitter for a bit and understand like the general vibe and kind of create a movement based on that. I do think we're going to have to be much more serious going into 2028 about this issue of war and foreign influence. We're going to need to have a much more rigorous vetting system, because really at the end of the day, the president, the executive branch can really affect foreign policy. A lot of the other policies they can't affect as directly because they get blocked by the courts. They need Congress. It's a state issue, et cetera. And this issue of war and peace and foreign policy, and because it affects so many other things, it's got to be a key issue. And especially because I think we kind of got bait and switched here in this administration.
That's absolutely certainly how it feels. Just obviously there's talk of boots on the ground. We're praying with everything we've got that doesn't, you know, come to fruition. But you have a lot of experience, boots on the ground, 11 tours. I mean, you've experienced it. What would it be like, for the Marines or the 82nd Airborne to try to take Karg Island, just for the man on the ground? What would that experience be like if you could imagine?
Eventually, at some point, it becomes a bloodbath. It's just when it becomes a bloodbath is the question. If and this is something that I think we fail to do frequently in America is look at the battlefield through our enemy's eyes. If I'm an Iranian commander right now, I am praying that ground troops are committed to one of the islands or somewhere on mainland Iran, because that is a gift. And as a matter of fact, if I were them, I would let us come in and not have a shot fired. I'd let us take some ground and hold it. Yeah. And get overconfident, and then I would rain down hellfire. I'd rain down ballistic missiles. I'd rain down drones. I would basically make them my hostages, because the Iranians have proven, basically from what they've done in the Gulf, they've got plenty of ballistics. They've got plenty of drones. We can't track all of them. We can't shoot all of them down. If we become a static target somewhere for any duration of time, especially on one of these islands, we're going to be sitting ducks, and like, it doesn't matter how tough and courageous our guys are. It's hard to be tough and courageous when you're in the sights of a bunch of a drone swarm, you know, or a ballistic missile barrage, as we've seen so far with the way our bases have been, I mean, basically made combat ineffective in the entire Gulf region. So, I mean, I am praying, and I'm really hoping that President Trump uses some common sense here. What I fear is happening, though, is that you have CENTCOM, which is a big war machine, and it has been for quite some time, and they're really good at coming up with a ton of ideas on how to employ this unit and that unit, and I think they're probably all getting thrown at the SecDef and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs right now, and they probably sound really good. And again, that artificial high we have after Venezuela, I fear that the president is going to think that we can kind of swoop in there with some kind of a force, and I don't know if it's grab the islands, I don't know if it's go somewhere else. And then we're going to get committed. And then once we're committed and once we take casualties, then we go into the cycle that we were in for basically the entire war on terror, where it's like, we can't leave now because we took losses. We have to honor our dead by fighting on. We can't leave in humiliation like Biden did in Afghanistan. And then we're in the cycle that becomes almost impossible for us to extract ourselves from.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a, we're the gambler sitting. All of our chips are gone. We're looking at the ATM going, maybe I can make it all back. Maybe one more load of cash. And then,
yes.
So it's sunk cost fallacy. And the longer we're in this, the worse it gets.
100%.
Gosh, it's just 100%. Brutal. Just final question. You now join the ranks of many who have left. Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but just when I think of you and I think of Tucker Carlson and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and so many people that were like the best champions of MAGA, and yet they've been, you know, put off to the side by the Trump administration. There's such a powerful contingent, and I think there's a lot of people on the left that are also sick of the foreign influence. Is this a time for a third party? Is that a possibility, do you think? Would you be open to that type of idea politically? How do we shatter the control that the two-party system gives to our enemies?
I would actually be very open to it. And if not a full third party, I think having basically a nonpartisan unity, I don't know if it'd be a super PAC or just a unit, an organizing principle that says, hey, we don't really care what your other policies are, but if you're against foreign influence in our government, in particular, the Israeli influence in our government, and you're against us getting involved in more endless wars, then we are political allies, in particular when it comes to the executive branch. Because again, I mean, the president's, he has full control over our foreign policy. Everywhere else, he needs to work with the other branches of government and things get tricky, which is the reason why I think presidents actually end up liking foreign policy so much,
right?
Because it's hard to control other things, but they can be like the man when it comes to foreign policy. And so if we had a bipartisan group, and I was on the Young Turks last night, and you know, I think there's a lot on the left and the right where we might not agree on abortion, tax codes, healthcare, et cetera. But we are aligned on, we don't want foreign governments running our government, and we don't want to get involved in any more, you know, endless wars. I think we could be a political force to be reckoned with, either as an independent ticket or really just as an element that's going to play a key role in every primary, on both sides of the aisle going forward, to make this a hot button issue, to put politicians on the record to say, hey, if you want to win the nomination, you need this voting block. And I think the more young people that start voting and stay mobilized, especially ones that are listening to, you know, the podcast, alternative media, I think there's something real there that can't be overlooked, you know, by fake CNN polls and, you know, Fox News, you know, hype videos about the next war.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to thank you so much for everything that you've done, and of course for giving us your time. This has been absolutely incredible, and I really can't wait to see what you do next, because I think you've really earned a lot of respect for those of us that truly understand what you've done and what a big deal it is. Just as a final note on the topic of podcasting and podcasters, it's funny because they want to denigrate podcasts. They call us all sorts of names. They claim that you're doing what you're doing for views, even though you don't have a podcast and they do. It's all a little bit incoherent, their argument. But they also at the same time are saying this is an eighth front war. We have to win the minds of the world. We have to launch all of these, you know, censorship programs or, you know, podcasts of our own. How important is it that we have these conversations, that podcasts be made? Is this an exercise in futility? We're just talking and nothing's getting done. How do we transform podcast into action? You know, what do you think about the attempt to discredit podcast as a platform right now?
I mean, because Mark Levin and Laura Loomer are screaming about it, you can tell it's something that they don't want us doing, because they know that we're reaching an entire demographic that actually, in my view, they're the ones who got President Trump to win it. Definitely the popular vote and probably the Electoral College vote as well. People who had never voted before, the crossover voters, et cetera. This is the way that we reach the masses. And everything else is just legacy media and the people who want limited debate, like still screaming for relevancy and control. So I think the growing influence of the podcast sphere is actually kind of a white pill. It is still like a way, and there's obviously, you know, there's podcasts that get co-opted and there's money and all that stuff. But still, I do think the way to get an authentic message through is platforms like this. So I'm grateful for you guys having me, and I think we just got to keep it up.
Well, we're thankful for everything that you did, and we'd love to talk again soon. And again, I hope this is just the beginning of your career and your ability to impact.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents
about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out. They put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15-point points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification and the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue. And I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this. And this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexandershore.com. It's T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexshowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexshowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.